the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! What a great run! He's in trouble. He is dropped. Kyle Williams dropped it. Oh, baby, what a hit. Tyrod looks. Tyrod on the run. Nobody in front of him. Touchdown! There's T-Mobile into the end zone. Boy, touch to the right. Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown! Touchdown! Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Orchard Park. Welcome to the John Murphy Show. I'm John Murphy with Donald Jones. What are you looking at me like that for?
I'm just listening to you.
Good morning, Vietnam. No, good afternoon, Orchard Park, and welcome to One Bills Drive. John Murphy and Donald Jones here for the next 3 hours to get you set for the Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals. Here to talk about that game coming up on Sunday at 1 o'clock. Good to be here. I know there's some folks in Lockport who were wondering if I would make it here on time.
Yeah,
I did.
I was wondering.
You were a little bit worried, were you?
I was worried. It was about 11:22, and I had to ask our producer, Jay Harris, where's Murph?
Is he coming in? Yeah. I'm here. Thanks to the New York State Troopers for looking the other way. And we're
no
here
U-turns.
At
no
One
U-turns,
Bills Drive.
Huh?
Yeah, I had a great time. I had to go to my old school, Donald, for a ceremony today and one last night, and it was cool. A distinguished alumni with a couple of my classmates. It was a good day. I'm
glad. You know, you're famous for illegal U-turns.
I am. Where did I go? You were there on the way to the combine.
There.
Yeah, that guy looked the other way, too. I live a charmed life. I do. For some reason. Was that guy a state trooper or a sheriff's deputy in Ohio?
I don't even remember.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
He didn't want to give us a ticket. It was a fun day. It's going to be a fun day today. We've got a pretty good show coming up for you. We're here until 3 o'clock. It's Friday. It's a couple of days before game day. And there's just a different atmosphere on Fridays. You can tell, you know, practice is going on the other side of the wall over there in the Pro Sports Training Center. Our office is right there. And you can tell when it's Friday, can't you? The energy, the noise, the upbeat attitude that comes out on a Friday.
Yeah, Friday is, I mean, around the building, everybody's like, yes, it's Friday. It's the last day of the work week. It's a long day for a lot of people that don't, you know, I think we have to work on Monday, but a lot of people don't have to work on Monday.
Yeah.
So people are excited about that. But then the team, yeah, you can feel it out there on the field. The closer you get to the game day, everybody starts to get excited, you know, because now the game plan is in and now it's like, all right, we're getting closer to the game. You know, you get like Monday and Tuesday. On Monday and Tuesday, you're trying to review film from the last game. Tuesday, you get guys that are in here just working out. Wednesday comes around, it's just like, all right, we got practice. We got to get through this practice and take in the whole game plan. Thursday's the same way. Friday's like, all right, it's Friday. We're getting ready. We're getting closer and closer to Sunday. And that's what we do this for, so that we can go out and have fun on Sundays.
You know, speaking of Sunday and Sunday's game, and people, I don't mind it, but people want to know, do you think the Bills will win? I don't know if they're going to win. To me, this is a classic NFL game on Sunday where you don't really know what's going to happen. I think the Bills are pretty good. I think the Bengals, at least on paper, should be pretty good. They've stumbled out of the gate. The Bills have come out of the gate pretty strong with 3 wins in their first 4. There's interesting matchups on both sides of the ball. 2 flawed teams. I think even with the Bills 3-1 record, you have to say that there are some flaws. You know, they're not a perfect team with a long way to go. But I like the setup for this game, Donald. I like the matchups here. I like the even side of the matchup that I think the Bills could win, certainly. I think, they should win, but nothing is guaranteed, especially against a Cincinnati team that is battle-tested with a veteran quarterback who can be good. He's a little bit erratic. And a defense that is as solid and experienced as that defense is. This is not going to be an easy pickup win for the Bills.
You know, this game kind of reminds me of Dolphins game last year. The first Dolphins game last year when the team went down to Miami and had to play against the Dolphins. And the team was riding hot at that point, mm-hmm. you know. And then they go down to Miami, and Miami got off to a rough start. If mm-hmm. you remember back to last year, they got off to a rough start. The offensive line was in shambles. They got everybody back. And then all of a sudden, you know, Ajay Ajayi goes for 200 yards. Like, this game reminds me, in terms of the setup, it reminds me of that game from last year because the Cincinnati Bengals have gotten off to a rough start. But over the last couple of weeks, they are playing a lot better, you know, and I don't know if people understand that this is not a bad team. Their record, I mean, I know we always say your record is who you are, but this is a good team, and I don't think that the players are sleeping on this team, but the fans might be underestimating this Bengals team that they're going out to play.
Look at the records, 3-1, 1-3. Well, Bill should win that game, right? Well, I don't know. I mean, the Bengals playing better, as you said. The Bills have played well. Bills have had some breaks, you know, long kicks from Hauschka. You know, you don't want to lean on that too much going forward. You don't want to count on that, I should say, is being your margin of victory. It's great to have a couple of officials' calls in each of the last two games that went their way. The Von Miller okey-doke and the play last week with Tre'Davious White. You need those breaks. You love those breaks. You love getting those breaks, but you don't want to lean on that. You don't want to count on that and get your victories every week.
You don't want to count on that at all. You know, you want to be able to, like, truly beat teams and finish teams once you get into the third and fourth quarter, put a lot more points on the board, create those turnovers. But once you get into that third and fourth quarter, you want to finish teams, you know, and you don't want it to have to come down to a certain call that might go your way. Or you don't want to always have to lean on your field goal kicker, because – As good as he has been the last couple of weeks, I mean, how many times can you ask for your field goal kicker to make back-to-back or two field goals over 50 yards in a game? That's tough to do.
And then to do it two straight games.
Right. You know, I mean, you can't – that's I don't know if that's sustainable for a full year, you know. So you need for your offense to be able to score points, drive the ball down the field, get into the red zone, and finish once you're in the red zone. We know they're fourth in the league in the red zone. The issue is – they haven't been able to really get into the red zone, which is why they are finishing with field goals, you know. And so they need to make sure that they get into the red zone and score touchdowns instead of just field goals. Because when you're just scoring field goals, you're going to come up against a team one day that will be able to score touchdowns. And your defense won't be able to always shut every single team down, and it will come back to haunt you.
The red zone stats, as you said, fourth in the NFL in red zone. I think the Bills have 9 trips into the red zone. There's only like 2-3 other teams that have fewer trips into the red zone. So obviously you'd like to see more productive offense in general, and a lot of that goes to the running game, which gets us to our topic of the day, the topic at least to get us started today. It's up on Twitter, our Twitter poll. Love to hear from you on the telephone line. Talk to us about it. What's the key? Pretty simple question. What's the key to a Buffalo Bills victory over the Bengals on Sunday? Not, you know, obviously you got to do more than one thing. We get that. But at the top of your list, what the Bills have to do to beat the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday, what would be at the top of your list? The Twitter poll, what's the key to a Bills victory over the Bengals on Sunday? Right now in the early going here, about a third of you, 36%, say limiting the connection between Andy Dalton and A.J. Green. That's interesting, 36%. 33% say the Bills receivers have to, quote, step up, do a better job. And we know that they're compromised. And we're going to give you the injury report here in a second. There are some, key pieces missing offensively for the Bills. But 33% say the Bills receivers have to step up. 22% say the Bills have to win the turnover battle to win. I think there's a lot there. That's where I would vote. 9% say something else. Let us know what you think. Give us a call, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What is the key, the number one key, to a Buffalo Bills victory over the Bengals on Sunday? What would you say, Donald?
I would say limiting the A.J. Green-Andy Dalton connection. You know, A.J. Green is a receiver that can take over a game, and he can do it in a lot of different ways, but they can throw the ball up to him, and he comes down with those big-time catches. Hail Marys, it doesn't matter. Like, this dude comes down with everything. Last year, we went into Cincinnati and beat them, but that was – you know, had a lot to do with they lost A.J. Green in that game.
Second play of the game.
Yeah, second play of the game. So, you know, they need to make sure that they can limit that connection. I'm sure he wants to come out and play well for his team. I'm sure he wants revenge after he went down last year, you know, and against this team. So, yeah, I think Andy Dalton is going to lean on him. He doesn't – I mean, I don't know if he's going to have John Ross, the speed guy, on the other side of that thing, but they do have Brandon LaFell, and Brandon LaFell is a solid receiver as well. So – they need to make sure that they limit A.J. Green and Andy Dalton's connection, or it can be a long day for this defense.
You know, you look at recent history, including that Bengals game last November, and yes, A.J. Green got hurt, left the game early, and that certainly played to Buffalo's advantage. But you can go back to last week, I think, Julio Jones in Atlanta. Did the Bills shut him down? No, and then he got hurt. But they were on their way, I think, towards limiting the amount of damage that Julio Jones could do.
Yeah.
You know, the Carolina game. I don't think Kelvin Benjamin got loose. I guess what I'm trying to say is I have a considerable amount of faith in the Buffalo secondary and the pass rush of shutting, not shutting down, but limiting the damage that teams can do through the air. I think, you know, through the first four games, we've seen that nobody's really gotten loose in a big way against the Buffalo secondary, against the Buffalo pass defense. And I'm fairly confident that they might be able to do that on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm confident as well that they're going to be able to do that. And here's what I expect to see out of the Cincinnati Bengals for fans who are going to watch the game on Sunday. I expect to see Cincinnati go with some tempo. They've been doing it the last couple of weeks, But facing this defense and this defensive front that can get pressure on quarterbacks, that is the best way to negate that pressure, because all you got to do is you go tempo, you're going fast. Now it doesn't even allow for them to sub these defensive linemen, rotate these guys in and out. You're going fast as an offense. You're also getting the ball out of your hands in, like, you know, very short periods of time, you know. So it's like you're going fast and you're getting the ball out fast, so you don't have to worry about that pressure from your defensive line, and you can wear that defensive line down. I think that's what I expect to see. And this Bills defense, yeah, I have a lot of confidence in them. I think that they will do a good job against A.J. Green. I think that they'll probably end up double-teaming him. The fact of the matter is A.J. Green is, you know, he's arguably top three receivers in the game, you know, and so he can make plays even though he's being double-teamed. So they have to make sure that they do a good job against
him. Top three, A.J., Julio Jones, Odell Beckham?
Antonio Brown.
Where's Odell?
Odell's top.
Four?
I got to think about it. He's top five to me. He's top five.
Top five?
Yeah.
All right, who's four?
I got to think about it. I got to go around the league a little bit and think about it.
Think about it a little bit.
Yeah.
I would put Odell in my top three. I'm not a fan either, but I think he's got a tremendous amount of talent. All right, so let's hear from you. What do you think? What is the key, the main key, number one key? What's at the top of your list of what the Bills have to do Sunday to win at Cincinnati at Paul Brown Stadium? The lines are open, 803-0550, and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. For me, it would be taking the ball away or at least winning the turnover battle. Five takeaways in the last 2 weeks. They've all been critical, all generated by pressure. To me, the number one key for the Bills is to win the turnover battle again. Easier said than done. You do see a team that, in fact, I talked to Coach McDermott about it this week, about the famous springtime visit of Peanut Tillman. And I told him, what was that all about, Coach, from his perspective? We heard players talk about it. And he said two things. He said, one, Peanut Tillman, is a great character guy that he wanted around his team. He said, but number two, it was the takeaway mentality and how you put yourself in position to get takeaways. The techniques, especially on the back end, the defensive backs, and we've seen that in practices and in games. And I think this team has adopted that, used it to their advantage the last 2 weeks, come out ahead in the turnover battle the last couple of weeks, and produced two wins over very good opponents the last 2 weeks. Winning that turnover battle again this week, I know it's a little bit trite, but I do think that is a key for a Buffalo defense, which is solid all over. It's a Buffalo offense that has not had tremendous amount of success yet through the air or on the ground in the last 3 weeks. And winning the turnover battle, giving them short fields, allowing them to snuff out the other team's threat, I think that would be my number one key to a victory this Sunday.
Key to a victory. And as you talk about your number one key to a victory, I think that the turnover battle is huge, you know, because you can see it on the field. When these guys are on the field and they are going for tackles, you can see guys stripping at the ball. Now, for the most part, they've done a good job of tackling, right? They've done a very good job of tackling and not just stripping at the ball, because that's when you get yourself in trouble, when you're not, you know, you're not sure tackling, you're just going for the ball. They've done a good job of punching through and also bringing the guy down to the ground. I always think back to, well, I think back to right now, last week's game, as we talk about E.J. Gain and what he's dealing with. I know you're going to get into the injury report soon.
Yeah, get into that,
But the play where he actually pulled up, he stripped the ball out.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that until our buddy Sal Cap, actually, Sal Capaccio, tweeted it over. The play where he's running down the field, it was a big play. I can't remember who had the ball, but he's running down the field chasing the guy and actually stripped the ball out at the same time he was pulling up because his groin was hurt.
Yeah,
you know? And
an
so,
amazing play.
Yeah, it was an amazing play. Now, the Bills didn't end up falling on it, but it just goes to show how these guys are trying to get the ball back every single time. They are trying to get the ball back, and I think that is a big thing for this team. They will have to continue to create those turnovers.
And let's let you know what's going on. And practice continues to go on. As far as the injury report, Sean McDermott met with the media earlier today and went down some of the injuries today and talked about, well, first of all, no surprise here, Ramon Humber and Jordan Matthews both ruled out for Sunday's game. The surprise, the one that you got to think a second time about, I think, is E.J. Gaines, Buffalo's starting corner. Donald talked about the play where he pulled up, making that strip the other day. He is questionable for the game on Sunday. The official injury status will come out after practice, but he's been trying to make it through practice, and E.J. Gaines is questionable. He will not practice today. Questionable for the game, according to Sean McDermott. Sharice Wright His backup went on the injury report yesterday with a back ailment, and he was just limited in practice yesterday. That leaves only four healthy cornerbacks on the 53-man roster. There might be a Friday-Saturday move to bring a corner in. I wouldn't be, they're going to assess how these guys are, and there might be a Friday-Saturday move to bring a corner in. On the rest of the injury report, Marcel Darius with his ankle, Shaq Lawson with his groin, Micah Hyde, all on the injury report. Looks like the Bills will get at least limited work for those three. Shaq Lawson looks to be healthy and is pretty much going to go. Cordy Glenn got limited practice in Wednesday and then a full practice on Thursday. It remains to be seen how much he played, and we'll get an update after practice today as well as far as the injury report. What's coming up on the show today? Glad you asked. We have a very good show coming up today. The usual Friday roster of guests, including Mark Kelso, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network. We're about 15 minutes away from hearing from Mark in studio today. Coming up at 1 o'clock, Greg Cosell. He's been a good addition to the show on Fridays. Greg Cosell, the host and producer of ESPN's NFL Matchup, does a great job breaking down film, and especially when it comes to quarterback play. A lot of league things to talk about with Greg Cosell, including the Bills and the Bengals and the Bills in Atlanta. I'd love talking to Greg Cosell on Fridays, right?
We get to talk about quarterbacks, which everybody loves to talk about quarterbacks. Yeah. That's his specialty. But he does just study film. He is a film guy. And when we get to listen to him break down different players and different games, it's always interesting. And I like to always talk about what I think is the biggest matchup this week.
All right. Greg Cosell joins us at 1 o'clock. At 2 o'clock, the lowdown. That's how we know the week is coming to a close, when we get the great Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us to give us his lowdown on what the Bills need to do against Cincinnati this week. When Lorenzo comes in, don't you think to yourself, It's Friday.
See, he comes down at, what, 2?
2 o'clock.
Yeah, so it's like the last hour of Friday, too. Yeah,
it's our home stretch.
It's like the back nine.
Yeah. The back nine with Lorenzo. That's what we should call it.
Yeah.
All of that coming up on the show today, including a lot of discussion of the Bills and Bengals, including your thoughts. What is the key, your number one key for victory for the Buffalo Bills this Sunday at Cincinnati? Lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We will start with Jim in Buffalo. Good afternoon, Jim. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon, guys.
How are you?
Hey, I'd just like to follow up on both of your points about turnovers being the key to the game. With they must get much more aggressive on offense when they recover turnovers. It seems, memory serves, in the last two games, they got four turnovers with short field. I don't think they gained a yard after any of them. I think they need to go straight to the end zone when they get lucky.
For turnovers. There is that belief in the league and through football in general that when you get a takeaway, when you get that sudden change, you should put them back on their heels right away.
Right.
I think that's a sound strategy, by the way.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. When you get a turnover, you need to try to score, like, right away, you know, because it's like a team is down already because they just turned the ball over. And then if you turn that into a quick strike score, then it's like, oh, man, you know. I mean, that can put a team into the tank, as we used to say when I was in high school. So, yeah, I think you do need to sometimes be a little bit more aggressive after a turnover. But at the same time, I also know that these coaches go by a feel for the game. You know,
right.
At what point of the game is it? How is the defense playing right now? How is our offense playing right now? And so, you know, they kind of go make their decisions based off of that.
And I think field position plays into it too. If you're deep in your own territory and you've just got a takeaway, you don't necessarily want to risk a turnover of your own, but that plays into it. But, Jim, you make a really good point. Did you have something else, Jim?
That was it, guys.
Good. Okay. Thanks. Here goes Mike. Hello, Mike. You're on the air with us. Good to have you on the air.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I think the key to the game is the turnovers. Like, we've been doing great on that end of the game. But I think if we can get the defensive line to really put some pressure on Dalton, because all through the years I've watched Andy Dalton play, you get some pressure on him, man, he's just not a good quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, I think all quarterbacks, if you put pressure on these guys, it's hard for them to really, really be able to, you know, maneuver in there or make throws on the run, especially these quarterbacks. Now, Andy Dalton is sneaky athletic, though. He will get out. You know, I remember last year he got out a couple of times and picked up some first downs for them. He is sneaky athletic, but I do think if you put pressure on him consistently and you hit him consistently, just like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were doing last night to Tom Brady, it throws them off.
Dalton, if I were a Bengals fan, Dalton's inconsistency would drive me crazy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And look, Bills have a quarterback, Tyrod Taylor, who a lot of people don't believe in, and I get that, and we see his faults. But the one thing about Tyrod is after, what, 33 starts now in a Bills uniform,
you know who
pretty much
is.
Know what you're going to get from Tyrod. He's not going to turn it over. He's going to try to chuck it downfield. He's got the ability to do that. He's tremendously athletic, has trouble sometimes, you know, hitting receivers in stride, on time, perfectly on target. We know who Tyrod is, but if I were a Bengals fan, and Dalton's been around down there for a long time, he would drive me crazy. Like, which Andy – yeah, pressure plays into it, but moreover, which – what are we dealing with? What kind of a – you know, sometimes he'll make a throw that it's as good as any throw you will see in the NFL, Andy Dalton.
Yeah, and then the next time
he's chucking it into the second row.
He's like trying to give a fan the ball. You know,
yeah.
Here's a ball for you. You get a ball. You get a ball.
It would drive me crazy if I were a Bengals fan, just trying to sort out who Andy Dalton is. Can you count on him on a regular basis? I'm trying to look. How many years does he have in the league now? He's in his seventh year.
Yeah.
I mean,
he's a veteran quarterback.
Yeah, it's not development time.
And he is looked at as their franchise quarterback, you know. And I think he is. I mean, you just look at, I can't remember what game it was. I think it was after the second game of the season. The fans were calling for A.J. McCarron.
Yeah.
Like, they were tired of Andy Dalton. I think they are getting tired of his inconsistent play out there in Cincinnati because they feel like they have weapons on the outside. They have receivers that he can get the ball to. They also have a tight end that is one of the best tight ends in the game. And they have running backs. You know, they have guys that can run the ball. But Andy Dalton is just inconsistent,
yeah.
You know. And
drive me crazy.
That drives that fan base crazy out there.
Speaking of running backs, I just want to make this point too. And it hasn't happened yet. But somewhere down the road this season, maybe more than once, there's going to be a big breakout game for Joe Mixon. I really believe that, Donald.
I think so.
He's very capable. I love the way he plays. I love how he looks. I'm not a fan of the man, don't get me wrong, but he's only got 136 yards, 2.6 yards per carry. But to me, you can almost see that he is waiting to break out, that he's big and fast enough and strong and has good vision. We'll ask Kelso about him. You know, contact balance, the stuff that Kelso talks about for running backs. It looks to me like Joe Mixon has it, which is how he wound up where he was. Well, that plus his off-the-field stuff is how he wound up in the second round.
He would have been second round or third round?
Second round. He would have been a first rounder without his
off-field baggage.
Because I think he's that good, and I don't know that it'll be this week because the Bills are pretty good in stopping the run, but pretty soon there's going to be a big breakout game, I believe, for Joe Mixon.
You know, during the whole draft process, everybody was saying this kid has first-round ability. Like, they felt like this kid, you know, could be the top two running backs, top three running backs in this class, you know. And because of his off-the-field stuff, he ended up being drafted where he was. But, yeah, he's big. He can bounce off tackles. He has some big-time runs. Now, the biggest thing, I don't know his breakaway speed, but I think he has enough to take it to the house.
I do. I think he's pretty good. It looks like he's going to be pretty good. The biggest key for the Bills and the Bengals this Sunday, Jerry's on the line with us in Buffalo. Hello, Jerry. Welcome. You're on the air. Jerry?
Hello?
Jerry, we talked about this. You're on the air with us. Jerry. Yes, Jerry, on the air. Clock's running. Let's go to Mike in Niagara Falls. Hello, Mike. Welcome. You're on the air.
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Doing well.
Good.
Hey, I got 3 points. I got my first point is one of the things that I've seen different about the defense is they're actually hitting and wrapping. You don't see any of this shoulder crap that you've been seeing for years. That the running backs and the receivers are bouncing off of. They're actually wrapping their hands, which is what we're taught when we're kids in football. And as far as my points are concerned, I think that the Bills need to stay grounded and they have to respect their opponent. If they can do that, and I think they can because Sean McDermott has them grounded at this point. If they can do that, I think this team, like I said last week, can win the division in 11 games.
Okay, well,
New England Patriots just... they're not that good right now.
All right, there's a lot there to unpack, Mike. Thanks. You've moved down the road pretty far as 11 wins and Patriots, and we'll get to that in a second. I don't detect, Donald, and, you know, we're around players all week here and talk to players. I don't detect that they are overlooking the Bengals.
No.
I think, and it struck me right out of the gate on Monday, Sean McDermott met with the media and talked about he had a laundry list of things that the Bills needed to do better, even after beating Atlanta. There was no sense of self-satisfaction. There was no sense that they've accomplished anything. I'm sure he gave that message to his players. And it seems to me, based on what's being said around the building here this week, that they pick up on that. Now, you never know how they play, but I have a feeling that that won't. I don't think that's going to be a problem. Overlooking the Bengals, feeling satisfied with what they've done. I don't pick that up. But
I don't pick that up either. Now I know people have thrown out the whole phrase a trap game. Mm. You know, could this be a trap game?
Bills aren't
good
enough to have a trap game. Are they good enough to have a trap game?
I guess I can see people's logic coming off the last two games that they won, you know, and now facing a team that's 1-3. But I think this team understands. When you watch on film, you can see that this Bengals team is not bad.
Right.
And if you're a player or a coach, you can see that, like these dudes. And you also know the history of the Bengals, the recent history of this has been a good team in the recent years.
For a decade, yeah.
Yeah, you know, just battling to be in the playoffs every year. They're right around it with the Steelers and the Ravens of who's going to be in the playoffs. Sometimes all three of those teams make it in the playoffs from that North Division. So, no, I think that this team understands the challenge that they have. They know how hard it is because it seems like the Bills play the Bengals every year. They know how hard it is to go into Cincinnati and beat that team. That's not an easy stadium to go into and beat them. It's not. I played in there twice. It's not an easy stadium to go in there and beat them. So I think this team gets that.
All right, we're going to break. Mark Kelso standing by to join us, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, former Bills safety. A lot to talk about as the Bills wrap up their practice week in the other room. We got a good show, as we said. Mark Kelso, Greg Cosell from ESPN NFL Matchup, Lorenzo Alexander at 2, and more discussion about this game, this Sunday game. Bills-Bengals, what's it going to take to beat them? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show, John Murphy and Donald Jones. And on Fridays at 12:30, we like to break down the game, go in depth into the game. And joining us in our One Buffalo studio here in Orchard Park, former Bills safety, color analyst on the Buffalo Bills Radio Network. All suited up in a navy blue suit with a white shirt, just like you're ready to.
Ready to
what,
go.
You got a business deal to close? You got
Sunday,
I'm going to change the shirt, but this is game day uniform. Now,
you know, game day is 2 days away.
Truth be told, I only have a couple suits, and this one was in Charlotte. I had to wear it back. I didn't want
to
put
it to get on the plane.
Yeah, this morning, so I didn't want to pack it in a box.
Well, it's great
I know if you're traveling for business, but flying with the suit on is rough to me.
It's tough, but hey, someone's got to do it.
I know.
Someone's got to do it.
Coach McDermott, Mark, who is a Wayman Mary product like yourself, is, I don't want to go into detail, but he's instituted a bunch of travel rules, apparel, how people dress, how people carry themselves. I would imagine, from what I know about you, you think that's great, wearing a suit on the plane, for example.
I would agree with that sentiment.
But why? Do you play better on Sunday if you wear a suit on Saturday?
Let me ask you a question, okay?
Yes.
If you go into a school district and you walk through the building and you see somebody in a suit, what's your immediate first impression?
That guy's in charge.
He's an administrator, or she's an administrator.
Yeah.
You don't think, because teachers typically don't wear suits. I wore a suit when I taught because it communicated importance in the classroom, and it communicated some respect. It was a way to get respect from the pupils, the young students that I was teaching, in addition to because you're a teacher, but because it communicates additional importance. When you're going on a plane and you're going on a business trip, it communicates additional importance. When you go to church, you dress up typically. A little bit anyways.
A little bit.
I don't want to fight you on this, and it's not something I feel.
I'd rather you guys fight. Let's do it.
It's not that's something I feel extremely strong about. But if you're on a trip with 52 of your business associates and you're all going to the same place, who are you trying to communicate authority to? You're to the flight attendants? I mean, you're all together.
Right. Not authority, importance.
Well, what?
You're not going for pleasure. We're not going to Cincinnati for vacation. And to spend some time in the fine city of Cincinnati, the home of Procter & Gamble and all these places. We're just, and Kroger, by the way, the home of Kroger. But that's because it's Kroger. It's the race team.
You
right?
are dropping so in
names. I'm dropping in names.
Look,
but we're not going to Cincinnati. They're going on a business trip. And I think that communicates that we have a plan. We're going there. We're not going to socialize, although some, obviously, players – you know, family members sometimes come to cities and have an opportunity to have dinner with them. But you have a, you're on a business trip, and I think that communicates that you're on a trip and you're on a business trip. And I think that discipline allows you the freedom to do some other things, you know. So
so
if you have that discipline, I think as they play really – as they play better and they communicate the fact that they can execute their responsibilities, sometimes some of that stuff might be relaxed a little bit. But right now I think it's a good protocol to follow.
Business trip. All right, I'll buy that.
I feel like Coach McDermott is a man of this is what we do, and it's always going to be like this. You know, we're never going to change – anything. I feel like he's like that. Like, we don't change routine. This is a part of our process. He's a big person in process, and that's a part of it. I don't see him easing off of that.
Well, I think he feels like there's some steps to putting together a winning attitude, and he wants to execute those steps. And then if you don't win, well, then you say, well, we may need to modify a few things. But if you start to win, like what has been happening here, then you say, well, we're certainly not going to relax them now because it seems like this protocol is putting the players in the right frame of mind to execute what they need to on Sunday.
Okay. And I don't want to dwell on this. One more question about it, though. When you were at William & Mary and you played under the same coach that Sean played under, right, Jimmy Laycock?
Yes, sir.
You're going to play at Richmond. Do you hop on a bus in a suit? Everybody wear a suit?
I wore a suit. Everybody did not wear a suit, and I don't recall what the dress code was. But remember, most of the time, I can only recall one time in 4 years that we took a plane for an away game because most of the time we were in the state of Virginia anyway. Yeah. So I don't recall if we had a dress code. I do remember that there were some guys that always dressed really nice, and there were some other guys that were just more casual, business casual. I don't recall if Coach Laycock had a dress code in place at William & Mary.
Did you think you'd come on here and talk about clothes and dress code today?
Well, it's a pretty nice-looking suit.
It's a good-looking suit. Yeah, it really derailed the conversation here. Mark Kelso in studio with us.
Let's talk football now.
Let's talk some football because nobody has watched more video of the Bills and the Bengals than Mark Kelso as he gets set to handle the color commentary on Sunday on the Bills Radio Network. Let's start with our Twitter poll, Mark. We're asking fans to weigh in. What is the key, the number one key for the Buffalo Bills to come out of Sunday's game in Cincinnati with a victory? What is the most important thing the Bills can do? On Twitter so far, our respondents on Twitter say the most important thing they can do is limit the Andy Dalton to A.J. Green connection. 38% say that's the most important. 30% say the Bills receivers have to step up and do it without Jordan Matthews. 23% say winning the turnover battle. 9% say something else. Can you isolate one thing, Mark Kelso? Is there one thing there that jumps out, or do you have something else?
Well, I'd like to say all four of those things, but I can't do
that. That's not how we play the game.
Right. So what I'm thinking is, I heard a caller that called in and mentioned about Andy Dalton's movement. Now, they have struggled a little bit in the early going. They've gotten better. They turned the ball over at a prolific rate earlier in the season. Then they took Green Bay to the wire, although they were up in that game, and then end up dropping that game. So when he moves his feet and he gets on the run, he is not nearly as accurate as he is when he stands in the pocket. He's got a good cadre of receivers, both those guys, and don't sleep on Brandon LaFell on the other side. Mm-hmm. And then Croft has been doing a nice job in replace of Eifert, who's been injured for that offense. And he's got a cadre of running backs as well that can catch the ball coming out of the backfield. I've always really, really like the play of Giovanni Bernard, and he continues to impress me when I watch him on film. So I would think getting Andy Dalton on the move, not allowing him to get in rhythm, because this isn't a vertical passing game like last week. What was that Atlanta's game was intended to be had Matt Ryan had all the receivers that are usually at his disposal. This is more of a lateral spread team, and they'll do some vertical stuff in the red area. But I think if you get Andy Dalton on the move a little bit, you force him to move his feet, it reduces his accuracy, and I think that gives the Bills defensively an added advantage and perhaps gives them an opportunity to turn the ball back over to the offense like they've done a number of times this year.
Now, I said on the last segment, Andy Dalton is like sneaky. He can get out of the backfield and pick up a first down, right? Like, you can't just say we're going to get him out. He's not like stationary like a Brady or one of these guys.
Yeah, no, I certainly wouldn't equate him to Brady in any respect, because Tom Brady's is going to run reluctantly. Andy Dalton is a little bit reluctant to run, but he'll get out. And I wouldn't say, I guess the description would be, can he hurt you with his legs or can he pick up first downs with his leg? He can pick up a first down now and again. I don't think he's going to hurt you. Certainly not going to have the magic that Tyrod has when he escapes from real pressure situations and then picks up yardage with his legs. So I wouldn't say he's going to hurt you with his legs, but I think when he's out of the pocket, he's really looking to throw the ball downfield unless it's a critical third down situation that he feels like he's got to pick up a first down with his legs. So I'm not overly concerned with a really healthy pass rush with four guys, and then all of a sudden Andy Dalton escapes. I'm not expecting a real dynamic play in that situation.
On the topic of the running backs, you mentioned how much you like Gio Bernard. I just got done saying to Donald a few minutes ago how much I feel like I can see a breakout game coming up for Joe Mixon. Maybe not this week, but some point. He's got all the skills you want for that position, and he hasn't had a big game yet, but I think that's coming. Do you
agree? Yeah. Well, and let me just throw in Jeremy Hill, too, because he's really the starter, and I think it's because Giovanni had been coming back off the injury that he suffered last year, and then Joe Mixon, they're starting to work him into the offensive package. He looks like he's got really good lateral quickness. He's got a really strong lower half, so he can drop his shoulder and he can run through some arm tackles, and that's the thing that I like. Nobody has the quickness, I don't think, the lateral quickness that LeSean McCoy has,
right.
But I've seen in some healthy demonstrations of lateral quickness by Joe Mixon. And he's been able to find some holes too. So he's got a little bit of instinctiveness when they're running that inside zone, and they're gonna run like typical teams do. I mean, they're gonna run a little toss and pull an offensive lineman as well, and sometimes they're gonna run a little flare screen. So they've got a little bit of creativity, but they're still gonna run the inside zone, and they're gonna run a little stretch play and bring an H back that's at a fullback position. He'll just go to the second level and try to block the linebacker. So typical things, but yeah, I've seen some healthy carries certainly by Joe Mixon, and looks like he's a player that's kind of unfolding the way he thought they would here as they drafted him.
Mark Kelso, our guest color analyst on the Bills Radio Network, in studio with us as he is every Friday at this time to break down the matchup. Bengals defense ranked third overall in the NFL, and it seems to me they're a pretty experienced group that knows what they want to do, and they're not great maybe anywhere, but they're pretty solid all over that defense, all three levels.
Yeah, it's really interesting because, I mean, I looked at their sack total, and I'm looking at the game, and, you know, and I looked at the Green Bay game, and I looked at the Cleveland game, and I didn't see a whole lot of pressure. Now, some of those guys are exceptionally capable of putting pressure on. There's no question about that. Carlos Dunlap is great. Atkins inside. I mean, you've got Michael Johnson, who's really long, and if you let him get his arms on you and extend on you, and I mean, they can pull and swim and get by you, but I think the Bills can be okay in that situation. There was a time when I thought they had the best front seven in football. Now they're dealing with some guys at the front and have a lot of experience. Linebacking core, mm-hmm. maybe a little bit different. The young player Vigil out of Utah, I think he's playing really well. And I'm looking at their linebackers and saying, these guys, of all the linebackers I've seen, probably the only group that I saw as a group that maybe was playing better or took better angles to the football was that Carolina group. And mm-hmm. I'm saying, who's coaching this group anyways? I got to know. I mean, whoever's coaching him is doing the right thing. And then I'm looking, I'm thinking, I thought it was Jim Haslett,
yeah.
and it is Coach Haslett. And those guys are lining up. Well, I always talk about how tight they line up to the line of scrimmage. The running back typically is lining up in a running play at greater than 7 yards from the line of scrimmage, 7 1/3, 7 1/2, sometimes 8. So linebackers do not have to be closer than 5 yards from the football, and they'll play with one backer aligned a little bit closer as well and kind of run a little pick so that there's one linebacker who can always climb over the top and get in on the play. So I think those guys are playing at a high level. I think their secondary is very athletic. They can be aggressive. Jones has always been aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
Bernard has or Dennard, excuse me, is a real quality player. Kirkpatrick Dre is really athletic. The safeties will spin really late in the down and try to create some confusion for the offense. They've got a good mix of coverages. So, I mean, I think they do some things really well on the defensive side. But, I mean, that being said, I do think the Bills will have some opportunities as well.
Where do those opportunities lie?
Well, I think there's a bunch of opportunities to run to the strong side if you have more offensive personnel, and then they're going to line up typically. If let's say DeMarco's in the game as a fullback and Charles is there, and you have your two wide receivers, and it was Zay and probably Andre. I'm mm-hmm. guessing that that's the package that would start the game. So if they're going to line up in what's called an over front, so they're going to have four down linemen, may bring an extra linebacker on the line of scrimmage, which would be that Sam linebacker, probably to the strong side, or actually some. sometimes at a weak side, and then they'll drop that safety down. So now in those situations, if you send both those guys, like what happened last week, and I thought the Bills found their running legs last week, and in the second half particularly with DeMarco on the lead block, and you're running to that strong side, but you've got extra personnel, you've got more personnel than they have, and if you get on the correct shoulder of those defensive players, you can create some scenes for LeSean, and again, that's all he needs is a little bit. And then if you load up on that side and you get into that cluster formation, or you have extra tight ends, you bring O'Leary in the game, and then DeMarco's in there as well, and you got two or three guys, or Logan Thomas, or whoever's in that situation, now you can run to that strong side. And in a regular formation, I think because they shift that lineman, that defensive tackle, over to the center, if you're heavy on one side, you have opportunities to run on that backside. So I think there's some opportunities to do some things against these guys in the pass game. Can we talk about the pass game too?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I think that, I mean, they'll play some man coverage, but these guys, and Donald can talk a little bit about what it means as a receiver to stem the defensive back, but these guys do not have good lateral control or lateral positioning on receivers when you start to stem them. And I think you can create some real opportunities in the seam areas just outside, you know, between the hash and the numbers against some of these defensive backs, whether they're playing zone, they get a little bit too wide at times, or they leave the middle open because they can be influenced by crossing receivers, and it can open up other areas. So the center of the field looks like a good spot for me, with Charles Clay involved in there, and then if Charles is running a shallower route and you get somebody in behind, I think there's some real opportunity in that 15 to 18-yard area.
Mark Kelso joins us. Mark, before we let you go, one question. This, we kind of polled our listeners on this a few days, but you might be able to speak to this. The Bills' current model, what they've done these first four games, winning three of four, is that sustainable? I'm talking about grid solid defense, the way they played it, great kicks from Hauschka, kind of eking out a little bit of yardage on the ground, a little bit more last week in Atlanta, and doing what they can in the passing game. Is it a sustainable model for the rest of the season for them to have success?
Yeah, I think it is, quite frankly. I mean, you're not giving up big plays defensively. You're creating some opportunities when those opportunities present themselves. I do think, you know, from an offensive perspective, you're saying we're doing what we need to do to win football games, but we've got to be a little bit more dynamic. So I think it's sustainable, but I do think – that you need a little bit more vertical passing game at times, and I think Kalen Clay may be able to offer that. I think Zay Jones is going to get to that point. I mean, he's such a good young player, and I know he's been a little frustrated in the early going about, you know, a couple balls he felt he should have caught, which would have been just acrobatic catches, but you know, he feels he's capable, which
talking
I think he
Clay.
Is. Kalen, I was talking about Zay Jones.
Zay Jones. Okay.
Yeah, but I think Clay's going to be able to give us that vertical stretch, the component that you're missing. But Zay, I think he's dropped a couple balls that he felt he should have caught. But I think his development's right on schedule, and he blocks well in the running game, and he's been getting open, and tough for young corners to do that sometimes. And he'll figure that other part out. Just keep playing the game, and it's going to come to him, much like it did last week in the second half. So I think the offense has got to continue to grow. I think they may have found the running package that suits them best,
right.
And that power running game they're a little bit to the edge, so they're not running outside, they're not running right up the middle, but when they're running in that, what they would call the outside B gap or a C gap out towards the tight end, I mean, that gives a lot of opportunity for a guy like LeSean McCoy to hit up in there, and then he can hit a cutback late at the same time. And I think they find themselves in that regard. And I think, from an offensive perspective, I think Tyrod, if you said to me, how's Tyrod playing, I'll say, and people, I saw Donald and Chris gave their best plays of the year so far in this first 4 weeks. The best play in my mind was the throw to O'Leary off the bootleg against Denver, because that's one time that Tyrod was just exceptionally decisive. It was a really tight window. He's running against his throwing arm. He's got Von Miller in his face, and it was just it was a fantastic play. And from that point, he has been really decisive with the football and been willing to throw to tight windows. If he continues to do that and the offense continues to grow, then I do think that becomes a good model for future success.
It's a signature play of the season so far.
I think it was. For me, it was.
Yeah.
That was a big-time throw.
Yeah, and catch. Mark, yeah, thanks. You're gonna
no gloves.
You're going to sleep in the suit tonight?
I am not. I'm going to take it off and hang it and change the shirt for tomorrow.
Good to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, my pleasure, guys.
Mark will be with us on Sunday at 1 o'clock for the kickoff at Paul Brown Stadium. The Bills and the Bengals pregame coverage on the Bills Radio Network starts at 11. Mark Kelso, former Bills safety color analyst on the Bills Radio Network. Donald and I back with more of the John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Mark Kelso joined us that last segment. Thanks very much to Mark. He doesn't want to leave the studio. I know I cut him off. I spend all day Sunday cutting him off. And then, Donald, you had to witness an ugly argument between Mark about what time I'm picking him up tomorrow to go to the airport.
This is not the first time that I've seen this stuff. I rode with you guys to the airport in the past.
We don't argue. I don't want to sit on the plane for an hour and a half, though, before we leave. Mark apparently wants to. We're going to have to sort this out.
There's a lot of work to do. It's part of the process. Don't rush the process.
The process doesn't mean sit on the charter at the airport for an hour and a half before the plane leaves. I didn't sign up for that. What do the Bills need to do to win this game? 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550, or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Let's take a call. We'll go to Dave in Rochester. Hello, Dave. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I think every week the keys to the game are going to be the turnovers. But on the defensive side, I have three keys. The turnovers, on the defensive side of the ball, of course, keeping A.J. Green limited. And I assume that they're probably going to be playing a nickel package most of the time because Eifert can line up outside. And I think the timing of their blitzes on the defense is going to be critical. And on the offensive side of the ball, I like the play selection last week with Tyrod rolling out of the pocket or rolling the pocket out or the bootlegs. With this defense that they're facing with Geno Atkins in the middle and Vontaze Burfict, I think the runs off tackle, jet sweeps, getting to the outside and really stretching that defense to open up the middle and using the passing game to get that run game going. If you can keep them guessing and keep them on their heels, that's going to improve your time of possession. I think that's really the critical thing is the time of possession, because if you can keep Andy Dalton's upbeat, high-tempo offense off the field, your defense is going to have legs in the third and fourth quarter. So I think those are the keys to the game. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Okay, thank you. Thanks very much for calling, Dave. Eifert hasn't practiced yet this week. We're going to see what happens when the Bengals practice report comes out later today. But he's got the back issue, hasn't practiced yet this week. They're getting good production out of his backup, though, Tyler Kroft, who had a couple of touchdown catches last week against Cleveland. But
yeah, they are getting good production from their backup. I don't know if Eifert is going to be in there or not. That's something that we don't know yet. If he is in there, he is a weapon for them. They like to go to him, and it makes it a lot harder. But don't sleep on Kroft, though. Kroft can get it done, too.
All right, coming up next, we're going to hear from Greg Cosell, producer for ESPN's NFL matchup, his view on the Bills-Bengals matchup, about last week's Bills game, about some of the other games on the schedule in the NFL this week. Greg Cosell from ESPN's NFL matchup going to join us when we return. You're welcome to join us as well. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports update.
Update from One Bills Drive, where practice has just wrapped up for the Buffalo Bills, their final big practice day as they get set to head to Cincinnati tomorrow. Earlier in the day, Bills head coach Sean McDermott ruled a couple of players out, no surprises. Wide receiver Jordan Matthews ruled out on Sunday with his thumb, and linebacker Ramon Humber is out as well as he's got a thumb injury. E.J. Gaines is going to be questionable. The Bills' cornerback, the starter, injured his groin in the second half of the win over Atlanta last Sunday, trying to gut his way through the practice week, but not 100%. And head coach Sean McDermott says Gaines did not practice today and now is questionable for the game. Sharice Wright, his backup, also on the injury report yesterday with a back ailment. He was limited today, so the Bills may have to make a roster move. In other injury news for the Bills. Marcell Dareus, Shaq Lawson, Micah Hyde, all on the injury report, but all of them expected to play on Sunday. The Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals coming up on Sunday, 1 o'clock kickoff. You can catch the game on our flagship station here in Buffalo, WGR Sports Radio 550, with the pregame show starting at 11 a.m. And, of course, we've got kickoff at 1 o'clock with myself, Sal, and Mark Kelso. Around the NFL, Washington Redskins cornerback Josh Norman avoided a major injury, but he's likely to be out for about 4 weeks. He's got a rib fracture and a small puncture in his lung. It happened just before halftime of their loss to Kansas City on Monday night. The Redskins get the bye this week. The four-week absence means that Norman should be able to return around week 9 against Seattle. And the Buffalo Sabres got 2 goals from Jason Pominville last night in his return to the Sabres, but they lost 3-2 in a shootout to Montreal. Buffalo with 45 shots on goal, 11 from Evander Kane. The Sabres lose it 3-2 back at practice today, and they play again tomorrow night on the road against the Islanders. That game, puck drop just after 7 o'clock on Long Island. And that is the update from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones, coming to you from our One Buffalo studio on this Friday, final day of the big practice week. And on Fridays at this time, we'd like to check in with a guy who's been around the league for a while, more than 30 years, as part of the crew at NFL Films down in New Jersey. He is the producer and the creator of ESPN's NFL Matchup. Happy to have Greg Cosell on the line with us. Greg, John Murphy and Donald Jones here. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Murph, what's happening? Donald, how are you?
I'm good. How you doing?
We got the first place Buffalo Bills.
Yeah.
You sound a little surprised about that, Greg.
No, I'm not. And I want to tell you guys that the Buffalo Bills are in my matchup show this week. Lewis Riddick's doing a piece on their play-action passing game. Tyrod Taylor, I believe, is completing about 80% of his play-action throws, which I think is a pretty good number.
I actually did a piece, well, not a piece, but we broke down some play-action passing earlier in the week. I think that's what we're going to see out of this Bills offense as we move forward.
Oh, without question. And my guess is that David Culley's influence is a large part of this, because I see a lot of the route concepts that you see a lot with Andy Reid, and David Culley has a lot of a background with Andy. You see a lot of those flood concepts, those three-level stretch concepts. You see a lot of post-cross. You see a lot of things that work really well off the play-action run game. And the thing is, most of these things come with Tyrod under center. So it really gives the better feel for the run game deception.
There was concern here, Greg, in these parts during the summer, during preseason, that maybe Tyrod would not fit in an offense that called for him to be under center as much as he has been. Are those concerns? Should we worry about that anymore? What do you think?
Well, my guess is, Murph, that people had those concerns for the reason that they want the quarterback to be a significant part of the run game, where you put him in the shotgun and you get all those read option elements and multiple backfield action elements that go with that. And you can certainly still do that. But play action, true play action, tends to work better with the quarterback under center, because you get a much harder and more defined run look, because the offensive line can really fire off the ball. You know, don't forget that second-level players, they're reading through from the line to the backfield. So if you give a more defined run look, you're going to get a harder reaction to the run action.
Hey, Greg, as far as the Buffalo offense, you know, there was concern in weeks 2 and 3 about the lack of production in the run game. Did you see signs in the win in Atlanta that maybe the Bills are coming out of that, a little more success on the ground? And if you did, what did you see?
They had a little more success in the run game, and sometimes it's opponent-based. Yeah. I mean, one thing when you're playing a team like Atlanta, well, they do have some – they have Dontari Poe, who's a big guy, but they have Jarrett, who's a smaller, quick guy. They're two stacked linebackers in their base 4-3 personnel are Deion Jones and Duke Riley, who are both LSU linebackers who probably neither one weighs 230 pounds. So don't forget, they played against Denver. They played against some really good run defenses prior to this. And not that Atlanta's bad, but they're different and they're lighter.
Now, Greg, how long do you think, I mean, we're talking about the play-action pass. We're talking about the run game that did start to get going this last week. But, you know, it's not the run game that we're used to here in Buffalo. We're used to the number one rushing attack in the league, at least for the last couple of years. How long can that play action work if your run game is not really scaring teams?
You know, Donald, I'm in the minority on that. I don't think players, first of all, they will run the game, run the ball with enough success. You don't have to run for 180 yards. But this is a team that's built personnel-wise, formationally, on running the ball. So every team that game plans to play the Buffalo Bills is going to game plan to stop the run first. Defensive players in the middle of the second quarter don't say, you know what? LeSean McCoy only has 31 yards on 9 carries. We don't have to worry about the run anymore. That's not the way this works. Defensive players read keys. So when you line up with, let's say, 2 backs or in a run formation out of a run personnel package, the defense is playing run. They're reading keys. So, you know, I've seen teams, to me, that is a total myth about run action. Being able to, quote-unquote, establish the run for play action to work. I've seen it way too many times where teams don't establish a run and then play action works great.
With Greg Cosell, executive producer of ESPN NFL Matchup. He is executive producer and analyst on the show. Speaking again about the Bills, Greg, Donald and I have taken note of the fact that the Bills, I believe, still are the team that targets its wide receivers fewer than any other team in the National Football League. What do you think of that, and how can they continue to have success doing that?
Well, that raises a different question, Murph, because they've been able to play the profile we've discussed over the last number of weeks where they run the ball, their defense plays really well. Look, they just went into Atlanta and held a record-setting offense a year ago to less than 20 points, okay? So if they can play that way, then they can limit Tyrod Taylor's dropbacks. I don't think he dropped back 25 times last week. Now, the question is, can you play that way every week? My answer to that would be likely no, but that's sort of what their profile is, and they'll play that way as long as their defense allows them to play that way.
Now, Greg, as you look at, they're going into Cincinnati this week. When you look at that Cincinnati defense, we've been talking about it all week. I think this is a good defense that Cincinnati has. What do you see in that defense?
I think it's a really solid, fundamentally sound defense. They don't blitz a ton, but I think they're physical up front. This will be a good test because, I think obviously they're going to go in, try to run the ball. We'll see if they get stuck a little more this week in those longer yardage situations. Paul Gunther, their D coordinator, will be very, very conscious of the play-action pass game. And every team has a type on another team, and Paul will have a real good feel for when Buffalo does their play-action pass game. That's really what you have to stop in the pass game right now, is the first down play action. That's where they're getting their chunks of yards.
Greg, are the Bills on offense equipped to continue to have success, or does more have to happen? Does more have to evolve? Do they have to develop more on the offensive side of the ball?
Yeah, I think they do, Murph. I think as the season progresses, their pass game will have to be more expansive to some degree. They're not going to be a high level, this is not going to be the greatest show on turf,
right? Mark,
we know that. But I think it does have to expand a bit for them to, they'll get into games where they're going to need that. It's hard to win in this league one way, yet you do want to have a profile and an identity that you feel that you can fall back on in times of trouble and adversity, but you can't win every week exactly the same way. So I do believe their pass game, as the season progresses, will have to become a little more expansive.
Greg Cosell joins us, executive producer, analyst for NFL Matchup on ESPN. Donald asked you a minute ago about the Cincinnati defense. I want to ask you about the offense. And what have you seen? What changed when they switched out coordinators a couple of weeks ago and went with Bill Lazor?
I think the ball's coming out of Dalton's hands a lot quicker. Dalton is a quarterback to me. He's a rhythm player. He's an orchestrator. He's a distributor. He's not a deep drop, sit on his back foot and drive the football. For him to be successful, and he's had success in this league. I know a lot of people like to rip him because he hasn't won a playoff game, but he's had success in this league. For him to be successful, he needs to be a timing rhythm player, and the ball needs to come out. So you have to define the reads quicker, and you do that with your route concepts. And I think that's one thing Bill Lazor has probably focused on, because Dalton is now playing with a much greater rhythmic feel to his game.
Now, Greg, I know Andy Dalton has played well in the last couple of weeks. We talked about this earlier this week. I don't know if that fan base is sold on Andy Dalton as a couple of weeks ago they were calling for A.J. McCarron. But is the front office and the head coach sold on Andy Dalton as their franchise quarterback?
That's a hard question for me to answer, Donald. My investment portfolio isn't as large as the people who make those decisions in Cincinnati. So I don't know the answer to that. I mean,
well, would you be sold on him? Are you sold on him as a franchise quarterback?
I think he's a solid professional quarterback who needs weapons and needs a well-orchestrated, well-designed offense, and he can be a successful NFL quarterback and has been. You get into that whole debate about winning playoff games and big games. That people said the same thing about Matt Ryan, and then all of a sudden he got to a Super Bowl and they had a record-setting offense. So, you know, I'm never sure where to go with those kinds of questions. You know, people are viewed as not being able to win until they win. And if so I don't know. But he's a solid NFL quarterback who, in the right system with weapons, can be a very functional, quality NFL starter.
Greg, the inconsistencies in Dalton's game would drive me nuts if I were the Bengals. I watched him in the game against Green Bay a couple of weeks ago, threw an absolute fastball strike to A.J. Green in the end zone, just a tremendous anticipation throw. And then same game, he's missing badly, missing wildly. I can't figure that guy out.
And that's the concern. The reason why guys like Andy Dalton, who's not a big-armed guy and won't wow you with his pure physical talent, probably don't reach a higher level is just what you're talking about, Murph, is those guys can't miss throws that are there. And even though he has some mobility, he's primarily a pocket player. And pocket quarterbacks can't miss throws that are there. And every once in a while, Dalton, not only does he do that, but there'll be times where he just doesn't process it properly, and he'll throw some picks where you scratch your head, particularly for a veteran quarterback.
Hey, Greg, what do you think about Joe Mixon? Murph and I think he's a good running back. We know, you know, what happened off the field and why he was drafted where he was drafted, but I think he's a good running back. I think he's going to be, you know, their number one running back for the next few years out there in Cincinnati.
I would agree, Donald. I loved him coming out of Oklahoma. Watched a ton of games on tape in college. I think he was the most complete back in this draft. To me, it's a matter of time before he's the guy. Now, that's one area where they need to improve. They have not run the ball well. There's not been a lot of room. Their O-line has struggled. That's another thing. That relates to Dalton as well. You know, Dalton needs a run game. He can't do this by himself. He's not that gifted a quarterback in terms of throwing. So they need to be able to run the ball better, and we'll see. I mean, I think this Bills defense has done a solid job in the run game. We'll see what happens with Humber out. I thought he played very well through the first, you know, 3.5 games until he got hurt. I assume is it going to be Matt Milano who steps in and plays?
Yes.
Now, you know, he's kind of an athletic, undersized guy from Boston College. You know, I like the player. The question is, can he hold up in the run game?
Greg Cosell, senior producer, NFL Films, on the line with us for a couple of more minutes and taking a look around the league a little bit, Greg. A week ago, Adam Gase in Miami called his offense garbage, and then they get blanked. They get shut out. How bad is it getting in Miami, and is this a Jay Cutler issue we're seeing down there?
I think, as with most things, Murph, there's many things. They have not been able to run the ball for the last 2 weeks, and it's an offense at its core, despite the weapons, that starts with the run game. And Cutler, to me, has been one of the most frustrating players I've watched as a quarterback probably in my career, because the physical talent is really high level.
Yep.
But there's just no consistent timing to him, no consistent anticipation. So it's a combination. I don't think he is at the point, and maybe he never was, where he's going to really be the foundation of your offense. He can certainly make splash plays and wow throws.
You ever verbalize that to your buddy J.J. Torito, our producer up here? He's got a man crush on Jay Cutler, and he won't let it go.
Well, you know, I don't know. I probably have verbalized that to J.J. because he spent a whole year with me, so he probably knows the way I think about a lot of things. Some probably aren't worth discussing or shouldn't be discussed, but I don't know if I verbalized that to him about Jay Cutler. I'm sure I did.
I'm going to make sure he sees this tape.
Yeah, yeah. Every time we talk about Jay Cutler, it becomes a debate with JJ.
Hey, I got to ask you about it.
At this point, there's not a lot to debate.
That's right. Here's a quarterback I want to throw at you. E.J. Manuel getting a chance at what? Career rebirth out there in Oakland? How do you think he'll do with the Oakland Raiders now?
He'll be in some ways like Tyrod, in the sense that I think Oakland's going to have to change the way they play. they're really multiple with their pass game with Derek Carr. I don't think they can do that with EJ. I think they're going to have to line up. They're going to have to run Marshawn, and they're going to have to hope that their defense, which has some clear weaknesses, can really play well. EJ is a function of a team, and even then we don't know if he can perform at the needed level, but he certainly can't be a guy you're going to ask to drop back 35, 40 times. He has to have the run game setting him up in normal down and distance situations, staying ahead of the chains, and he has to have a defense that keeps you in the game. You have to try to win games with EJ 17-13, 20-17.
Right. Now, the biggest thing is they haven't been able to run the ball, which is a reason why they brought in Marshawn Lynch. What's going on with that running game? I mean, that's one of the best offensive lines in football, but they haven't been able to really run the ball or get anything going in the passing game.
I think some of it, Donald, could be having to do with commitment to run the ball. I think that, to me, okay, and again, I use this term a lot, and some people think I'm wrong, but I think Marshawn Lynch is a volume runner. I think he needs carries. I don't think he's a guy you give the ball to nine times a game. Mm-hmm. I think he needs 15, 16, 17 carries because he's an attrition runner. He wears out a defense over time, and I think, you know, they haven't really done that with him. Maybe they did in one game. But, you know, I think they need to line up now that EJ's playing and give Marshawn the football. And I don't know how long Carr's going to be out, but until Carr's back, you know, when you have Carr and all those weapons, I think as a coordinator, you probably feel like, hey, we can do a lot of things in the pass game, and you try to do them. But now they're going to need to line up and give it to Marshawn.
Hey, Greg, I want to ask you about a pretty good game on the schedule this week, the Chiefs and the Houston Texans.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
In particular, Deshaun Watson, who opened a lot of eyes with his game last week, and now it's kind of a step up to the deep end, right, for Deshaun Watson.
Yeah, and I think Bill O'Brien's done an absolutely fantastic job of understanding what Deshaun is. And you're dealing with one of those mobile quarterbacks who does not have a high-level arm, so you put in all those things that we spoke about a little earlier in the run game, with you put him in the gun, you do read option, you have all the quarterback run elements, you have all the multiple backfield actions, you impact the second level of the defense, and you can present some more defined throws. And I think that's what they've done a really, really good job with. And plus, he gives you the ad-lib ability.
Another game that I'm actually looking at is the Seattle and L.A. game.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know really, you know, who's going to win that division out there. Obviously, it's very early in the season, but – you know, L.A. looks like a strong team. They look a lot better, and Seattle's not looking like the Seattle Seahawks that we know.
No, this is a fascinating matchup to me on the side of the ball, the Rams offense and Seahawks defense. The Rams offense has become one of my most fun offenses to watch. I think Sean McVay, with his pass game concepts, has really done a good job. Again, you talk about allowing your quarterback to hit that back foot with defined reads and defined throws based on your concepts and your route combinations. I think it's really nice. They're so much fun to watch. Now they'll play a Seattle defense that's physical, that outside I think they play a lot more man-to-man now than people think. Chris Richard, their coordinator, has really evolved that defense. It's not just that pure cover three. It's a ton of man coverage.
Greg, we always talk about a lot. We talk about a lot of quarterbacks with you, and the second overall pick, Mitchell Trubisky, is going to make his debut on Monday night for the Bears at home against Minnesota. What do you think we'll get from Trubisky with his limited resume in college? Is he going to be in over his head, or do you think he'll be okay?
Well, that's hard to answer, but I think they'll do what they did in the preseason. Dowell Loggins, the OC there, will do a lot of you know, quarterback run stuff, just what we were talking about, a lot of play action, a lot of boot action. They'll get him outside. They'll define the throws. He threw exceptionally well on the run in the preseason. He was highly accurate. I think you'll see a lot of that. When you do those kinds of things, you have to stay in the game. You have to be in close games. They'll hope their defense, assuming it's Case Keenum, and it looks like it will be again, I think they'll feel their defense can keep the game together, and therefore Trubisky can be managed, controlled, manipulated to a certain extent, and not have to be stuck in too many situations where he has to stick throws on third and long 20 yards down the field. You'll see third and long if the game's close. They'll run screens. They'll, you know, conventional screens to the back. They'll run tunnel screens to wide receivers. They won't ask him to make throws if the score doesn't demand it.
Now, Greg, the last question I have for you is about last night's game. and specifically Jameis Winston. Jameis Winston wants to be, and we all view him as one of the star quarterbacks for the future of this league, but he didn't look like it last night against the Patriots.
Yeah, I think Jameis is a little up and down still. I think he's got to play with a little more overall discipline to his game. There are times he's a little reckless. I think the skill set is indeed there, but I just think he can be a little sloppy with a lot of things he does. And if he can play with more discipline and control, he can advance. It's funny you mentioned him, Donald, because a lot of people are starting to ask me now, well, is this what Jameis is? Because he's in his third year, same system, because Dirk Cutter was the coordinator in his first year. So, you know, that's a hard question to answer, but there's no question there is room for improvement.
A lot of people in Buffalo, as you might expect, Greg, were standing by with shovels ready to bury the New England Patriots, especially their defense going into that game. But there's still a lot to be heard from New England, and I wouldn't rush to judgment on them too soon, would you?
Hey, let's live with it, guys. We got the first place Buffalo Bills. Come on now.
That's a good ring.
You got to ride the wave.
Yeah, we're riding. We're riding it. Greg, thank you. It's always great to talk to you on Fridays. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it, guys. Thanks.
Okay, Greg Cosell. He is the executive producer, analyst for ESPN's NFL Matchup, 38 years senior producer for NFL Films, has a great overview of the league. Love hearing him talk about, especially those other quarterbacks around.
I love it. I love it to talk about these quarterbacks. People love quarterbacks.
People do. You can always talk about quarterbacks.
We need to talk about receivers more, though.
We're back with more in a moment. John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, live at One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
More of the John Murphy Show.
Yeah, we're back. John Murphy, Donald Jones, live from One Bills Drive. The Bills have wrapped up their practice week and making their way. They've got the charter tomorrow and 1 o'clock kickoff, the Bills in Cincinnati. Our thanks again to Greg Cosell from NFL Films, ESPN NFL Matchup, who's always got a great way of looking at the game. You know, Cosell and Kelso back-to-back, by the time you get done to those two segments, they're about 45 minutes apart. You pretty much know, as far as X's and O's, what to expect, what this game might look like, right?
I think so, yeah. Don't you get that sense? Yeah, but those two guys are like film junkies.
Yep.
Once you listen to them talk in back-to-back segments, it's like, all right, I know what to expect from this game. They're able to just, like, spit out names and everything, you know, so it's a good thing.
And you know what? And here's the thing, Donald, you may or may not agree with this. I love that. I appreciate that about both of them, Kelso particularly on Sundays. But then it comes down to, and I think you would get this more than many, it comes down to really guys, players.
Yeah.
Playing.
The X's and O's are good to know and all of that stuff,
yeah.
But it's always going to come down to, do you actually have the guys to make these X's and O's actually happen?
Yeah.
You know, do you have the players on the field that can make this happen? Do you have the personnel? And that's always the question. I think they talked about that last night during the broadcast. Do they have the personnel to get things done? Do the Bills have the personnel to get this run game started this week, get it really, really going against this Cincinnati defense? Do they have what it takes in the passing game? Now, without your number one wide receiver, to get a passing game going against a defense, their defensive backs are veterans, and these guys are athletic, and they're playing fast, and you know, they can create some turnovers. Does this team have what it takes to beat this Cincinnati team in Cincinnati? That's what it comes down to. The X's and O's mean a lot, but at the end of the day, do you have the guys?
Love what the Bills have done in the last couple of weeks, in the first 4 weeks of the season. I think everybody's happy with that. But the question remains, and a little more evidence coming up Sunday, can they keep that going? Does that formula work? I got the sense from listening to Greg Cosell that you thought it might, but you would like to see more development in the passing game. You would like to see them run the ball a little bit better than they have over the last 3 weeks. And that's going to be the story of the season moving forward, I believe.
Yeah, and I feel the same way. You know, you want to see it. You want to see the running game really go. You want to see them be balanced on offense and see, you know, this passing game really get going. I mean, look, you want to be able to play from ahead every single game.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't always work out like that, you know. And what we don't know about this offense is, can they truly throw themselves back into a game? You know, if you get down by 14 points in the third quarter, well, now you got to throw the ball. And so can they do that? These are things that we don't know about yet, just because this defense has been doing such a good job of keeping the team around in games, you know, and at least close enough where you can win it by a couple of field goals or something like that. But, yeah, there are still a lot of questions to be answered about this team.
Want to know what you think. Give us a call. Lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Got an open segment here. What do you think? What's the key? The number one key. I know there's a lot of things have to go well. Our Twitter poll, though, deals with what's the number one key to a Buffalo Bills victory over the Bengals on Sunday. What is the absolute thing that has to happen first? And so far on Twitter, with more than 1,200 votes in, 38% of you say the number one thing, the number one key for the Bills is to limit the Andy Dalton to A.J. Green connection. 30% of you say the Bills receivers have to step up. And as we know, they've got some, you know, with Jordan Matthews officially out of the game, they're going to have some guys step up. Zay Jones in particular, Andre Holmes, you would think, maybe Brandon Tate, maybe Kalen Clay. The receivers have to step up. 30% of you say that. 24% say winning the turnover battle is key. That's where I'd throw my vote. 8% have something else in mind. Let us know what you think. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. The key or keys to a Buffalo victory on Sunday. Let's go to Max in Rochester. Max, welcome. You're on the air with us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm a big fan. I watch you guys every day.
Thanks, Max.
I think the key to winning this game is to move the ball downfield. Cincinnati has seemed to have had a pretty good defense all year. In the last few games, the Bills' offense has been getting better because their defense has been really good. Mm-hmm. With the loss of Jordan Matthews, I think they're going to need the receivers to step up. I think Zay Jones is going to have a big week this week. And Charles Clay, again, he had a very good week last week. But, I think the receivers need to have a pretty good week this week to win the game.
Okay, thanks, Max. They need to be balanced offensively. We've talked about that since the springtime. They're going to need that balance. They will miss Jordan Matthews. I have no doubt about that. But as far as Jordan Matthews being a major factor in what they've done these first four games, it's hard to make that argument.
Right.
I think.
It really is hard. When you talk about passing the ball in this offense, it's evident that they want to make sure that LeSean McCoy and Charles Clay are involved. You can't really say that about the wide receivers. You know, Jordan Matthews, he's caught a touchdown pass. I think he has one touchdown this year. But you can't see them trying to focus in and make sure that we need to get Jordan Matthews the ball because mm-hmm. he's a playmaker. You don't see that yet. You know, you see them getting the ball consistently to Charles Clay and LeSean McCoy, and they do need to get better at that, you know, and throwing the ball to their wide receivers, because if you're never getting your wide receivers involved in the game, there will come a game where you have to throw it to your wide receivers, and these guys just aren't used to getting the ball, you know. And so I think now Zay Jones, you know, and everybody's been talking about Zay Jones and his issues, but now he is the number one wide receiver, and he is going to have to get involved in the game because they're going to need him.
From what you've seen of Zay Jones, you know, we've seen him have a couple of drops, obviously, but I don't detect any discouragement, any self-pity, any like, oh, I'm in a bad spot here. I don't get that at all. In fact, he almost, when you watch his comments in the locker room from Wednesday, he almost seemed defiant. Like, hey, I've done this before. There's a reason why I caught all those passes at East Carolina. My father played in the NFL. My brother plays in the NFL. He's a rookie, but he almost seems like, don't talk to me like I'm a rookie. I know what I'm dealing with here, right? Don't you get that sense?
Yeah, he's been around football forever. You know, I mean, since he's been born, he's been around football. He's been going to football games. He's probably seen his dad go through these ups and downs, you know. And so right now he's going through it as a rookie wide receiver and catching the ball. But he also talked about what he went through his freshman year at Eastern mm-hmm. Carolina, you know, and he dropped passes his freshman year. It really is a learning curve for players. When you go from high school to college, there's a learning curve. When you go from college to the NFL, there's a big difference in the play, you know. And so you find yourself having to learn so much. At the same time, you're not necessarily catching the ball, so you start to press, you know, and that's what he's doing. He understands what he's doing wrong. You know, he just has to go out there and make plays, and hopefully they get him the ball enough to do that.
Your thoughts on the Bills, what they need to do to win Sunday? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll 3-1-888-550.
I just got a tweet that said, all the Bills need to do is cross the 50-yard line and light up the house.
I like it. Let's go to Dan in Los Angeles. Hello, Dan.
Hello, how are you doing today?
Great.
I believe our defense, our offense needs to stay on the field longer and not wear out our defense. In time, our defense are going to get burnt out. You know, we just need to chew up the clock and keep our team, you know, the offense running down the field and using up the clock. And that would definitely help our team, you know, get by this week and win this game.
So what's the formula again? Let me know. Tell me again.
Keep the offense on the team. Spend more time using up the clock, running the ball, doing the deep, passes, and not keep their defense on there so long. Our defense sometimes the last few, seems like spending too much time on the field. Keep going back on the field, too many threes and outs.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah.
Keep moving the ball.
Yeah, Dan, I understand. You always want to make sure you're having long drives, so that you can keep your defense healthy and fresh, once they go back in there, because the defense is a strong point of this team, and you need them to shut teams down or slow teams down at least. The offense, and it's annoying when you're on offense and you're not able to stay on the field, when you go three and out, it's like you come over to the sideline. I remember, Stevie and I would come to the sideline and just talk. We wouldn't necessarily talk. We kind of scream and yell and all of that stuff.
Who?
At a lot of different people. But it just becomes annoying. Not just Stevie and I, but Fred, everybody's like, why can't we get going? What's the deal here? And so.
You find that to be helpful?
No, but it helped us with our sanity,
okay.
You just start yelling on the sideline, throwing coolers and stuff.
Yeah.
More questions?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay, this goes way back. It had nothing to do with this season. It's just something that always bothered me. I was already wondering what happened. It was back when Jeff Toole played against Kansas City. He had a really good game. He threw a pick in the end zone. It cost us the game. But he never had another second opportunity. Do you know any reason why he never had another opportunity to see what he can do?
Well, I mean, that pick was meaningful. It was a tough play. I don't know. I think who was the head coach? That wasn't Chan, right? Was that Dick Duran?
No, I'm not actually sure at that time.
Me neither.
It was the one that quit.
Marone?
Yeah, Marone. I think it was Doug.
Yeah, I think you might be right there. I don't know. I have to put that back together. You didn't play with Jeff Toole. Mm-hmm. That was after your time.
That was after
me,
yeah.
Good guy.
He already had one start.
Yep.
That was it.
Yeah. You know what I found? And Donald may slap me for saying this, but most of the time, Dan, guys get the opportunities, and if they, nobody gets really cheated out of opportunities. Let me say this: very few NFL players who can make it don't get a chance to show that they can make it. Does that make sense? You ever know about somebody who's you thought was, wow, what a great player, never got a chance to show it?
Oh yeah,
really?
Yeah. I think it happens because, guys will come in and we talk about it all the time. When a new coach comes in, they want their own players.
But they go someplace else and play.
Well, yeah, they'll go someplace else and play. So you mean just here or just in general?
Yeah, like Dan's question, Dan in Los Angeles' question, Jeff Toole, why didn't he get another chance? I assume he meant here or somewhere else, because I think people, pretty smart personnel people, pretty smart coaches who can evaluate talent and figure out
great players usually will get a second chance. Mm-hmm. A player who has potential sometimes doesn't, because – and we you see it with certain players that go into a certain system – and they're very good in that system. They go to another place and they're just not good, Or you watch the draft and you see a player get drafted and it's like, they just drafted who in the second round? And it's like that coaching staff, that GM liked that player. They are perfect for that system, So I think it does happen where guys don't get another chance because no other coaches out there feel like, I don't think that he's good enough to actually make plays for us in our system.
But I do think not that players are interchangeable parts. The great ones will always have a place to play. The good ones will typically find a place to play, and the mediocre ones, cheaper maybe, or somebody that you like more, somebody you're comfortable with.
That's what it always
– it's kind of like life. It really is, right?
It is, though. It is like life, And then you also see in this league players and coaches the same way. Players will bounce with the coach that knows them, Like a player gets cut and all of a sudden they end up in another place and there's a coach there that knew that player. It's kind of how this league works. So there might be somebody else that might not get a chance because this player knows that coach.
Yeah.
And they have that familiarity.
Here's a call from Trevor in Buffalo. Hello, Trevor. Welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Sure. So for me, the biggest key to the game is line play, both offensive and defensive line. Kind of piggybacking what you were saying, John, about turnovers being your key to the game. I think if we're able to, get some significant pressure with our defensive line and make Andy Dalton struggle, which can happen, because like we were saying, he's such a streaky player, and make some turnovers, I think that'd be a significant factor. And then on the offensive line, if they're able to protect Tyrod Taylor and, most importantly, get the running game going, I think this could be an excellent game for the Bills.
Okay, thanks. We appreciate that. You know, Preston Brown in here with us yesterday, Donald, and we're talking about the Bengals and talking about Andy Dalton, and he said, wasn't even prompted, he said, you can sometimes get him to put it up for grabs.
Yeah.
I think they know. I think they've been told by their coaches in the other room that very thing.
Mm-hmm.
We can get this. We can get this guy to make mistakes. And this goes to my point about one of the keys being the takeaways, more takeaways, and winning the turnover battle. I think they are out to force Andy Dalton into some mistakes and know that he can make some big mistakes from time to time.
Here's the thing I see with Andy Dalton, and I see with quarterbacks like Andy Dalton who are not the great elite quarterbacks. You know, Andy Dalton has always had A.J. Green. Since he's been in this league, he has always had A.J. Green. It's just like here with Tyrod Taylor, you know, and it kind of, yeah, these are big play receivers, and you can go to those guys. But when you have that guy, you want to force it into that guy because you're like, I know he can make a play. And all of a sudden, you end up turning it over, you know, because either you're not just throwing to him, you're always looking for him, you know, where you're missing somebody else, and then you make a throw late because you were trying to focus on A.J. Green. Somebody else is open. And then you're like, oh, he's open, let me throw it. And then all of a sudden it gets tipped and picked off or something like that. You know, Andy Dalton is a quarterback that is, just like Greg Cosell said, he needs to have weapons around him, and he relies on A.J. Green in a tough spot. And because of that, you know, I think he looks to him a lot. Because of that, he's late on other throws, and he'll throw interceptions and things like that. And if you get him off his mark, I think all quarterbacks, you'll get them to turn it over.
Turnover is a big key to the Buffalo Bills' last two wins, and the formula has been getting the good quality takeaways, getting timely kicks from Steven Hauschka, getting just enough offense to squeak by. Sean McDermott met with the media before practice today, and the head coach was asked if the Bills can continue to win with the formula that they are employing currently. Here's what he had to say.
Well, we have to continue to evolve in all three phases. You know, we're a balanced football team. I know a lot is said about the defense and the special teams. You know, we evolve in all three areas, and we expect to win in all three areas. And sometimes you get two out of the three. Sometimes you get one out of the three. Sometimes you get all three. It's just, you know, we're confident in all three areas, and we have work to do in all three areas, that said, too.
In that vein, on the bright side, you're winning, but the margin for error seems to be slim. All three areas need to be functioning and, you know, and have function in those three wins with turnovers and all that stuff. Does the margin of error concern you as far as pulling out these victories?
Well, that's true in the NFL, I think, across the league. Yes, I'm always concerned. Like I said before, that's why I feel like I came into this job with a full head of hair, and now I have what I've got, right? That's what keeps me up at night, that we have to continue to improve. You know, that's parity around the NFL. This is why the league is the way it is. This is why people tune in to watch, because there's such parity around the league. There's close games every week. And I think it's rare when you find a team, you know, that wins by X amount of points as opposed to fourth quarter. This is what the league wants. And I think it's exciting football. It's highly competitive football, and it keeps us all on the edge of our seats throughout an entire game.
I think Sean McDermott just said, hang on for the ride. We'll see if we can make this thing last, right? Don't you get that sense? That's what his answer there is?
I mean, that's what I think it is. I don't think that this team will really blow teams out or anything. I think each game is going to be competitive, highly stressful. There are going to be a lot of people with a lot more gray hair after this season.
All right, the Bills injury report just came out, the status for Sunday's game. Two players officially out. We've talked about them already. Linebacker Ramon Humber with his thumb and wide receiver Jordan Matthews with his thumb ruled out of Sunday's game. And the Bills have four players questionable, and this is an interesting list. Three players in the Buffalo secondary questionable, including starting cornerback E.J. Gaines with his groin, cornerback Sharice Wright with his back, and safety Micah Hyde with his knee. Three defensive backs questionable. Two of them starters, and the number one backup at corner is questionable as well. Left tackle Cordy Glenn listed as questionable with a foot ankle issue. So not practicing today, Humber and Matthews, limited practice for Micah Hyde with his knee, Sharice Wright with his back. I have a feeling that Micah Hyde is probably going to be able to go, but that's just based on what he said earlier in the week. Sharice Wright with his back bears watching. As we said, just limited work for him today. Full practice for a bunch of them, Kalen Clay, Marcel Darius, Cordy Glenn, Tywan Jones, Shaq Lawson, LaShawn McCoy, Kyle Williams, Eddie Yarbrough. The defensive backfield, though, is going to be interesting to watch, Donald, with Gaines questionable, Sharice Wright questionable, a couple of corners, and Micah Hyde questionable. They may have to make a roster move over the next 24 hours to put somebody back there in the secondary, right?
They might have to in the next 24 hours. They have to figure out if these guys are going to play or not. I think you still have Greg Maben on the practice squad, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He can come in and fill in. It's some decisions that have to be made, and these are the things that we talked about in the preseason and back in the spring, where we kept saying that situations are going to come up that Sean McDermott has to handle, and this is one of those situations, injuries.
Yep. It's here. All right, we're going to break. We're going to come back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
John Murphy and Donald Jones back at One Bills Drive. Weather in Cincinnati Sunday is going to be, it looks pretty good, humid, mostly cloudy, occasional showers, the high in the mid-70s. Should be able to handle that.
Good day for some football.
Sounds like it won't interrupt too much. Pete Morelli is your referee for Sunday.
You know much about him?
Nope. He's an NFL referee.
Oh, okay.
That's all I know.
Don't get in the way, Pete.
Come do your job, and hopefully we don't hear from you too much on Sunday. That's the goal.
Yeah.
That's the goal. John Murphy and Donald Jones, we're here at One Bills Drive. We want to know from you what the key is to a Buffalo victory on Sunday. Let's go to Nino in Buffalo. Hello, Nino.
Hey, thanks for getting me on. I think it's pretty simple. Win the turnover battle. I think we're a better team than them. If we don't turn the ball over, and if we get a turnover, I think we'll win. And I also have a comment about Jeff Toole about the couple callers ago.
Mm-hmm.
I thought he had a lot of promise, but I know why he never got another chance. I don't know if you recall how he melted down in that game.
In what way?
He melted down. Oh my God. He was ripping the pictures up on the sidelines that guys were giving him, snapping at the coaches. He was actually throwing a temper tantrum on the field like a 5-year-old.
I do not remember that at all. Are you sure that happened?
I've never been more sure of anything in my life, and I was devastated because I loved the way he played.
I do not recall that. I'm looking up on the internet. Went to Jacksonville in June of 2015, waived a couple of months later, went to their practice squad, and then released from their practice squad. So he had a little time with Jacksonville. Two games played with Buffalo. The start against Kansas City, this was 4 years ago, 23-13 loss. I don't remember that. Was that after the game when he had the tantrum you described?
No, it was during the game. He was. I remember one thing in particular. A coach said something to him, and I read his lips, and I can't repeat what he said, but he was like he was totally out of control. I mean, I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
Okay, I missed that totally, and I'm not disputing that. I totally missed that. I got to know Jeff Toole a little bit when he was here 3 or 4 years ago. He got cut the next year. I didn't see that side of him at all. I hope that's not the case. To be honest, he was playing for kind of a difficult coach who I'm sure was very demanding in a difficult spot up against Kansas City Chiefs. I'm sure there might have been some frustration.
It does happen, though.
Yeah.
You get frustrated on the sidelines, and you never want to see it. You saw it last week with Antonio Brown.
Yeah.
He and the offensive coordinator – going back and forth, it happens on the sidelines.
Yeah, how about did Roethlisberger sort of call out Antonio Brown later?
I didn't see what he said.
He just kind of said he didn't appreciate that, basically, which I thought was good. That's leadership, That's the Steelers are not going to spin out of control or anything, but it's good that Ben Roethlisberger had the presence of mind to rein people in. Not if you don't agree.
I mean, I agree with that, but I'm just not a Roethlisberger fan.
Why not?
Ooh, history, just history of stuff. But he is a good leader for that team. He has done a good job for them, won a couple of Super Bowls. I'm happy for them. He did need to call out his star wide receiver because you don't want to act like that on the sidelines. But, Antonio Brown got emotional because he felt like that play was designed for him, and Roethlisberger never even looked that way. He went to the check down, and Antonio Brown came wide open.
So in 65-70 plays in a game, if he misses them once, that merits a tantrum by Antonio Brown.
Talking about wide receivers here.
That's my point exactly. We're going to take a break. Come back. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, where the Buffalo Bills have wrapped up their practice week. They will leave tomorrow for Cincinnati. The injury list is interesting, to say the least, for the Buffalo Bills. Ruled out of Sunday's game, Ramon Humber with his thumb and wide receiver Jordan Matthews with his thumb. And a couple of players questionable, including three players in the Buffalo defensive backfield, including starter E.J. Gaines with his groin injury, questionable. His backup, cornerback Sharice Wright, questionable with a back. And safety Micah Hyde, questionable with his knee. Left tackle Cordy Glenn listed as questionable with foot and ankle. Gaines did not practice today, as neither did Humber and Matthews. So it remains to be seen if the Bills have a roster move to make before the game on Sunday or how they will put it together, especially in the defensive backfield. The Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals coming up at 1 o'clock on Sunday. Our pregame coverage on the radio network starts at 11 a.m. I'll be there along with Mark Kelso and Sal Capaccio for the Bills and the Cincinnati Bengals. Around the National Football League, a couple of other stories. Marcus Mariota may or may not play, according to Mike Malarkey, for the Tennessee Titans this week. Mariota has come up with an injury. And the Washington Redskins will be without cornerback Josh Norman for about a month. According to NFL Network, Norman is out 4 weeks with a rib fracture and a small puncture in his lung. And it's about a month timetable. He suffered the injury just before halftime of Monday night's loss to the Kansas City Chiefs. Hockey, the Buffalo Sabres play tomorrow night, game two. They're on the road for the first time against the New York Islanders. That's a 7 o'clock faceoff on the island. The Sabres came up short last night, a shootout loss to Montreal, 3-2 the final. Jason Pominville with a couple of goals. Buffalo with 45 shots on goal, 11 of them from Evander Kane. Sabres lose it 3-2. They are practicing today and then head to the island to play the Islanders tomorrow night at 7 o'clock. And that's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts. And as usual on Fridays, it's the signal that the weekend is here when Lorenzo Alexander comes in. Bills linebacker Lorenzo Alexander comes in for the lowdown. His look at the game coming up on Sunday. Thanks for coming in, Lorenzo.
Oh, yeah, my pleasure. You know, I always enjoy coming in and talking to you guys, hanging out a little bit. This quick question, John. Yes, is the glasses like a fashion?
No.
Like Westbrook? Because I see you took them off and you read very well. I'm just trying to figure that out.
What? I can't read. I'm old, Lorenzo. I can't read this stuff on a regular basis. Now I don't need to read as much.
Oh, okay.
I read better without the glasses.
Yeah, that's just unique.
They're bifocals. So ideally, if I were using them right, I would go like this.
Oh. Hey,
you look down? No, I don't like when people have them down at the
tip of their nose.
On the tip
of their nose. Oh, I had a coach
and
like
then
that.
They look up at you.
Which is why the glasses come off.
Okay. All right. Makes sense.
Look up
okay,
over
I
the
just,
glasses
just,
at
just
you.
Quick question. I just kind of observed that while you read
very
that.
Very observant.
Day. Yeah.
Very observant, Lorenzo. Let's talk about broadcasting for a second. I know this is something you have an interest. You went to NFL broadcast boot camp, right?
Yeah, I actually did the journalism broadcast boot camp.
Oh.
It's kind of like a reading and broadcasting and radio at Bowling Green 2 years ago now.
Okay.
So it was very interesting. That's where I met Gary Manilow at. Or Jerry Manilow.
Jerry Manilow, yeah.
And a couple other guys. James Brown did it as well. And so it was a good experience.
We were talking on your way in about last night's game and a couple of weeks now with the new CBS number one crew. Jim Nantz with Tony Romo did last night's game. I think Tony Romo is a breath of fresh air. You know, it's just a different sound.
Yeah, he's doing a great job.
Energy.
Great transition.
So
unique at it. I mean, he brings something different to the game. And I've heard some great things. So last night I was kind of actually trying to pay attention to, you know, some of his commentary. And he's great at it. I really loved it.
He really is. I'm telling you, last week I watched and listened to him. And there was like a two-minute situation. And he was like, all right, I'm going to let the quarterback go ahead and take this one. And he went play by play before the play. He's like, this should be a pass. And it was a pass. This should be a run. This, this should be a draw. And
it's a script. You know, most teams are very it's copycat, do the same thing. They may have little small nuances that are particular to a given coordinator or quarterback. But most, I mean, you can kind of go down the line and they all run as similar concepts. I'll tell you also who I liked. I like Jay Feely's. When he comes in and does the special teams and talks about the kicker, like he's watched the kicker before the game and said, well, most of his kicks have been missing right going his direction. And nevertheless, the kicker missed it to
going
in the direction like at the half. So all those little things that they're kind of adding in are pretty awesome.
You're a special teamer. Do you find Feely knows more about special teams than kicking? Or I know he focuses on the kicking, but can he talk about coverages and stuff?
Yeah, he can talk about coverages. I mean, he's a lot of the kickers sit in all those meetings anyway, and he played in the league, 15, 16 years? So he really understands the game outside of just, you know, kicking field goals and kicking off.
Lorenzo Alexander in for the lowdown as we talk about the Bills game coming up against the Cincinnati Bengals. Lorenzo's here on Fridays, 2 o'clock.
Lorenzo, kickers usually know if there's a strength to one side of a kick coverage team, right? Like they know.
Yeah, they know where,
all right,
where
we're
the
dog's on this
at.
Side. Yeah, I'm going to make sure that this is the side that's going to make this tackle.
Yeah, I mean, they do. They know. I mean, I don't think – but at the end of that, I think sometimes it's better for where they feel most comfortable kicking the ball, whether they're trying to kick it out, or if we want it in a certain place, some kickers have better control going left and right. Obviously, wind becomes a factor. Mm-hmm. So all those things go into it. But at the end of the day, you try to balance your guys out as far as having maybe, you know, two or three guys on either side that can cover guys up or guys that are just hunting to stand out. That's why it hurts so much when we have a guy like Cone Anderson, you know, go down last week because he's one of our dogs out there, and he definitely adds depth to our defense as well.
I was just going to ask you about that, and Colt went to injured reserve the other day. His season would be over. And there's an injury list today, Humber, Matthews, et cetera. But to me, maybe when it's all said and done, the most significant injury right now for this team might be Colt Anderson. He was flying around on coverage teams.
Yeah, I mean, he's a difference maker out there. And even, I mean, you saw it even last year. I mean, I just hate to see a guy that does everything right, take care of his body, does the film study, works hard, grinds it out, and is a blue-collar, selfless type of player and goes out there and breaks his arm. Again, the same arm is just crazy how that happens. And, you know, so obviously it happens for a reason. He's going to go on and do bigger and better things as he recovers from this. But, yeah, he was our leader. He's a guy I vote for captain every year, you know, for because I know the type of mentality he brings to it. He takes passion in it, and he goes out there and lays it on the line. And he's not that big, but he's gonna put his nose in there and make a lot of big plays doing it.
So you always have that one guy, especially on coverage teams, that one guy that's always down there, right? Mm-hmm. And if you are a competitor, yeah, we're on the same team, but you're not going to beat me to the ball every time. You know, like, I'm going to get there. Yeah, and he was right. That guy that's down there every time. So he forces everybody else to try to get there before he is, and then all of a sudden you got big plays because people are flying to the ball.
Yeah, that too. And that hurt us as well when he got it because we have a big return. And those type of guys can cover up. I mean, because we misfit some of the stuff on the wedge, but when you have a guy like Colt, TJ is another guy that does a great job of that. They are very disruptive. So even if you have some bad fits or guys don't get off blocks, when you have bell cows on your special teams that get down there all the time, they can be disruptive and really cover you up and end up having a big play when if they don't do what they do, it's a big play on us. And that's kind of what happened to us last week.
That's exactly what happened. It was like you didn't have anybody flying all the way down.
Yeah.
And watching the play, everybody was getting blocked. It was like everybody was block here. And I'm like, oh, this is about to get returned.
Yeah.
And boom.
And I could see it forming because I was actually trailing on my side and, you know, trying to fit it up because, you know, when you're running down with guys, you don't know necessarily what they're thinking. But the longer you play, just like with offense and defense, when you work with guys, you know what they're going to do. So we have some new parts and not quite sure. I'm like, oh, man, this thing is about to, bam, it hit. you can just feel it coming. And, you're just like, oh, I wish I would have played it slightly different. Because we had that look in practice all week, but we just played it different in practice. So it just sucked that we allowed that to happen. And that's actually one of the things that we can't allow this week to happen. Obviously, they got Erickson and Pac-Man that go back there as well, as well as Bernard sometimes. And all three of those guys have some juice to them and can take it to the house. So we definitely have to be firm in our coverages and play off well off each other this week.
Lorenzo, that return, and it was really on the list of things, and it was a list that Coach McDermott had Monday coming back here of great win, but here's a list of things we got to do better. I'm sure that was his message to you guys throughout the course of the week, huh?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we have guys on this team that are here for special teams, and I feel like I'm one of those guys as well, and we have to stand up and do a better job of putting our defense in a better or a more advantageous spot as far as field position as well as our offense, because all that affects everybody when you give up a big return.
Yeah.
Luckily, the defense stood up, and we had an interception by Micah Hyde, so it kind of made that return null and void, and we was able to flip the field and have a big play out off of it.
You know, there's so much talk about, and Coach McDermott always talks about, you know, the culture and changing the culture, and everybody in the media is like, he's changed the culture. The team is 3-1, and we're like,
no.
Can you change the culture that fast? But where I was going with that is one thing he said, I think, in his Monday press conference was knowing your roles on the team.
Right.
And that's part of a culture. Like, look, you are a special teams guy right now. That's just what it is. Yes, you have to focus on, you know, you got to know your stuff in case we need you on offense or defense. But this is your role, and so do your job.
Yeah, and that's key. And I think most of our guys understand that if you're going to be on this team and be productive, take advantage of your opportunities. And that's on special teams. You know, I try to stamp as much as I can. Like, that's what I did for the majority of my career. You go out there and be dominant, play, you know, 10 plus years just on special teams. That's what your role is. What's wrong with that?
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't, you know, it's great. I've been in it for a long time, you know. Take care of your family, you know, you're on TV, people know who you are. Because especially in this town where special teams, I think the fans really appreciate and understand it. Obviously, it's been played great throughout the years here. And you think of a guy like Tasker, who is really the epitome of what special teams looks like, and has set that bar so high. So, this is a great town to be a special teamer and go out there and ball out, because they're going to show you just as much love as if you was, you know, a starter on defense or offense.
I've never heard anybody say that before. So some towns, they don't even pay attention to special teams?
I think some towns just don't understand the significance of special teams. Every town doesn't have a Steve Tasker that is should be a Hall of Famer, and, you know, it's kind of really set the bar very high. You've also had some great kickers here as well. So I don't think every town just as knowledgeable as Buffalo Bills fans are.
We bring Lorenzo Alexander in every Friday, this time for the lowdown when he goes through his keys to the game. And interestingly enough, Donald Jones had a list of keys to this game. And if I want you guys to think about this, how closely aligned your keys are from one to the other. And if you think about it, Lorenzo, you came in with keys, control the Bengals' defensive line. Donald says control Geno Atkins.
Right.
Lorenzo, you said eliminate their run game with better tackling.
Yeah.
Donald said better tackling. Lorenzo, you said execute fits and coverage lanes on special teams. Yeah. Donald says better coverage teams. You didn't coordinate this, right? That's total
happenstance. He always does that. He calls me early in the week, and we talk a little bit, and, you know, he kind of picks my brain, and then obviously he wants to look good on TV, so he comes to the expert.
Hey.
And I try to help him out as best I can. And so, you know, when I come in here, I don't think that he's going to actually have his top key. He thought he'd come up with at least his own ideas based on our conversation.
Yeah, reword it a little bit. I think he's going to plagiarize me and get his kicked out of school. He's going to reword it.
Young style, pretty much, right? Is that how I went at Youngstown State?
Hey, you get it how you live.
Yeah, just a little bit, so the teacher can't. Man, these papers look a lot alike.
So the lowdown, Lorenzo, your list anyway, and Donald, starts with controlling the Bengals' defensive line, which, you know, people look at their 1-3 record and say, big deal, but this is a formidable defense.
I mean, they're dominant. I mean, you think about Geno Atkins, who is probably the best 3 technique in the league, interior lineman. I mean, next to probably Aaron Donald. You know, they 1 and 2, you can flip them. I mean, it really doesn't matter. You want those guys on your team. And then you have Michael Johnson and Carlos Dunlap, who are very long, athletic guys on the outside. Yeah. You know, especially with some of our quick game, can get their hands up, be disruptive, knocking balls down. Those are the type of guys that you want to be able to control, be able to run the ball on, get them tired so they can't just pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. Because these guys can go very well, great players. I mean, I've been down at the Pro Bowl with Carlos last year, just kind of talking to him a little bit, and he's a phenomenal pass rusher and really understands the game.
You know, it's always interesting to me when you play certain teams and you can see what it is that they're trying to get in terms of personnel. Like, we would play Cincinnati, and a lot of these guys have been there for a while, and they are, like, lanky guys, you know.
Yeah.
Like, you play certain teams, and you have a bunch of tall dudes. And then you play other teams, and they're shorter.
They draft a certain way.
Yeah, they draft a certain way. And, you know, this team is more in terms of the defensive front. They're tall, lankier guys. But Geno Atkins has been good for some time. I think people underestimate him because he's so quiet. Like, you don't hear much about Geno Atkins.
Right.
You don't hear, but he already has 3 sacks on the season. Like, he's doing his thing right now.
He's a dominant player. I mean, he doesn't have to say much. You know,
right.
He goes out there and just hits you in the mouth hits you in the mouth again and gets a sack and then, you know, makes plays in the backfield. And you look up and you're like, man, this dude is dominating us. But, I mean, he's not going to talk trash. I mean, he's just not that type of guy. He's just a worker. And has been a blue-collar guy and a high-production guy, you know, since he's been in the league.
Seems to me that Bengals defense derives a lot of benefit out of having guys who've been together for a while. That's a veteran team that's played together for a while.
Well, that, and then I think they just have that swagger, borderline craziness almost to them. I mean, you think about Burfict, you think about...
You're talking about Montez Burfict. That's what you're talking about.
You think about Pac-Man. Yeah. Those guys live on the edge. And, I mean, it's not a bad thing. That's what makes them who they are and why they're so great. I mean, I remember covering kicks against Pac-Man. You tackle him, he getting up, just swag, get off me. What are you doing? I mean, just that whole attitude, and it's just like, man, chill out, man. It's a play. I just made a play on you. What are you doing, man? Chill. You know, and they just had that bravado about them, and that kind of percolates throughout the whole team, and they just get after it. And so, I mean, their defense has been really good. I think they had, 2 picks against Aaron Rodgers, which I think hasn't done that. I mean, that probably what Max is total for his whole career.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So they've been doing a great job on defense, and that that type of swag is something that we're going to also have to control as well out there.
Burfict has been in trouble for crossing the line a couple of times.
Well, obviously he's not going to change because he continues to do it because that's who he is. I mean, that's just what makes him him. And he's a great linebacker, and he likes that old school mentality, and that's how he grew up playing the game, and he ain't changing for nobody, even if his pockets keep getting hit. And I respect him for it. He is who he is.
I'll tell you a quick story from the Senior Bowl a couple of years ago. Their linebackers coach is Jim Haslett.
Yeah, I had Jim Haslett.
Mm-hmm. So he just got the job at Cincinnati a couple of years ago, and it was, 2 weeks after the problem game against Pittsburgh, and we're talking in Mobile, and I said, gee, Jim, you're going to have to kind of rein those guys in a little bit, huh? And he goes, no. I want them to play like that. I want to see more of that.
Exactly.
That's a little bit of Haslett.
Right, Haslett, old school, too. Yeah. He's kind of crazy himself. So, I mean, it just speaks to that mindset. Obviously, he was in Pittsburgh for a long time. Just that physical, black and blue type of players that get after and are physical and just dominate you, even if it may be at the detriment. They willing to take a couple because at the end of the game, you go across the Vontae's in there. Yeah, I don't think I'm running that route. You're not getting me jacked up.
Hey, man, you know what I mean?
Right. I ain't going in there. And that could be the difference between you winning and losing a game.
Sure. Yeah. The lowdown with Lorenzo Alexander. So you talked about the Buffalo trying to handle their defensive line. And your defense, the run game, it's kind of a three-headed monster they have back there at the run game. And you guys have done a pretty good job overall of tackling.
Yeah, I mean, I think up until last week, those backs last week are special. I mean, I missed a couple of tackles just being in space. And I think we just have to do a better job of tackling guys. I know another play, they kind of squirted out. We had a guy on him and just not tackling well. We was able to get him down and defend the next blade of grass, which was good about our defense. We have guys run to the ball, but we can nip a lot of that stuff in the bud early just by tackling better, getting those guys on the ground, creating some negative plays, which is going to really help us on third down. Because right now, first and second, they've kind of went to more of a quick game under Bill Lazor, trying to get the ball out of Andy Dalton's hands. And really, that's kind of an extension of their run game. But if we can stop them on their runs and put them in some, second and longs, and then which hopefully leads to some third and longs, we can pin our ears back and get after them and start getting guys down. I think we lead the league in pressures and hits right now, and we're kind of chomping at the bit to actually start totaling up some sacks.
Yeah.
What do you think of those backs in particular? And Donald's heard me say this all day. Joe Mixon.
Bay Area.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, he's got a ton of off-field baggage, which counts.
Right.
But on the field, he hasn't broken out yet, but I can almost see that it's going to happen eventually.
I mean, they have really featured him, in the game. I think he's still a young back, so he's still learning about pass pro protection on third downs, but they utilize him in the screen game. He has great vision, patience. Sometimes he sits back there and kind of waits it out, almost like a Le'Veon, and then comes out the back end. So he has a great ability, strong, powerful runner. So I'm looking forward to playing against that. But that's the type of backs I like. He's not gonna really break you down. He's going to, make that one cut and try to run you over. The physicality that I like versus last week when my
jumping
man Freeman.
Fake spin
out, stiff arm. Like, man, that's a highlight reel right there, So I'm looking forward to playing him, and I know our guys are. But we're really going to put the onus on our D-line as far as knocking their offensive line back. And allowing the linebackers just to kind of flow, run downhill, and make some tackles.
He's from, it says Oakley, California?
Yeah, that's out on the other side of the tunnel, like going out 24. It's like Concord side.
Okay, all
over,
right.
Over there, so yeah.
What do you think of Gio Bernard?
He's solid too. Has a lot of juice. I don't know why they haven't utilized him as much lately, so I don't know what's going on internally with them, but. Yeah. I mean, he gave us some fits last year. He's another strong back. All three of their backs are very similar, downhill guys. Bernard probably has a little bit more shake to him as far as he may end up a couple more places or can break you down in space. But all of them are real aggressive downhill one-cut guys that run very strong. And then Hill, 32, I think he hasn't played as much because he's put the ball on the ground a couple of times. But he's another good back. So if he's in the game, we definitely want to be able to try to strip him and get the ball out and create another possession for our offense, if not score on defense ourselves.
Lorenzo Alexander sharing his keys to the game, the lowdown as the Bills get set to play the Cincinnati Bengals. You touched on this a minute ago, but special teams, you talked about the 61-yard kick return that Atlanta had last week. What kind of challenge is presented by this return game for Cincinnati?
I mean, I think it's the same thing. When you talk about coverage, most of the time it comes down to us, how we fit things, how we get off blocks. They do have two good returners. Erickson and Pac-Man is really good because he's very aggressive and will end up anywhere, has the speed to take it to the house in big plays. But at the end of the day, if we fit things well and get off of our blocks and have a mindset like we're about to go out here and tackle inside the 10
right.
or 15, you have that mindset, we will be fine. And that's what I try to, you know, just, man, guys, just go out here and just ball, hairs on fire, especially if you're a special teams guy. You should be fresh, ready to go, eat, you know, you should be down there.
Wait for your opportunity.
You know, waiting and thinking, I'm like he said, you're competing with everybody else. And who's going to get to the ball first? Yeah. Who's going to make the play? And really setting that tone, the same thing on punt. You know, as soon as we protect, allow Colton to get the ball off, who's going to get down there first? You know, I'll be trying to beat gunners down there. Yeah. And that's like my mindset when I'm trying to get down there. A lot of those guys, Taiwan and Andre, do a great job of being disruptive. And you go down and make some plays off of those guys. So hopefully by the way I play and the way I talk to some guys, we can continue to step up and be a better coverage unit.
Yeah, you're going to need it. These guys can return it. And like you said, the special teams, for me, yeah, technique is – goes into it. You yep. have to be, you know, like good in your technique, but it's really a mindset, you know, and it's like, I want to go down there and make the tackle. You only get right. a certain amount of plays right. on coverage
one,
team.
One
yeah.
chance. You only get one chance. There ain't no right. redos.
And it's, and it looks bad when they return one on you. Yeah. You're like, man, they just returned a kick. Like, that can change the outcome of a game because return kicks, punts, or kickoffs can totally just momentum. It just shifts. You can feel it in the stadium, and they're at home. So if they get a big return at home, their crowd is going to be into yeah. it, you know. And I don't know if this Bills team doesn't want that on
right.
the road.
Yeah, and I mean, I've been in places where you go down there and you lay somebody out in their building. It gets real quiet, yeah, real like, quick, ooh. and that momentum shifts, and it's just –
I've been that dude. It's, you get laid out. I've been that dude. Like, you get hit, and you hear the crowd ooh. Like, ooh. You're like, man, let me get up and limp off the field.
Yeah, I love that moment, man.
Lorenzo, the Bills, 3 wins in the first 4 games, really a play or two away from being 4-0.
Yep.
Some of the fans are giddy, you know, over the moon. From the outside looking in, I don't get the sense that your teammates are like that or you're
no,
like that, right?
No, not at all. I mean, last year we were 4-2 and didn't make the playoffs. I've been on teams that we were 6-2 and didn't make the playoffs. And I think Sean has done a great job of making sure there's still a sense of urgency in the building, that we haven't been crowned yet with 4 weeks into the season. We've only played 4 games, only one quarter of a four-quarter season, and that we have to continue to trust in the process if we want to be where we want to be at the end of the year. We have to continue to climb and not rely on what we've done. And we haven't played a perfect game. And as a competitor and a professional, you're always in search of that perfect game, which you'll never get. So that's why you always want to stay hungry, always try to figure out things that can make yourself better so you can get closer and closer to what perfection looks like on Sundays.
There's a long climb ahead, isn't there?
It is. I mean, still early. We've only played one division game. We haven't played the Patriots at all. We have some other good games coming in, but right now our whole focus is on, you know, Cincinnati because they have a lot of great weapons. And if they get in a rhythm, I mean, they can turn it up too. I mean, because they've been in the playoffs, forever, you know. You know right. what I mean? So they're a very good team.
How important is it to go into the bye week with a win instead of a loss?
I mean, that's huge. I mean, it's almost like the game before Christmas, you know. You want to be able to relax and enjoy it and not, oh, man, I wish I would have made that play like that. Oh, I wish I would have done that. You know, you kind of think about that the whole time, and it's just not as – you enjoy your family, but it's just not as relaxing as right. it would be if you're going into it with a win. And then, obviously, that catapults you in the standings, where people think of you. You continue to build confidence as a team, continue to – like we talked about last week, string those wins together.
Yeah.
That would make 3 in a row, and that's really when you start seeing a streak and start developing winning habits. So it's always key to be able to do that.
Best of luck to you. Thank you for coming by here today. We appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, always enjoy it.
Lorenzo Alexander with the Lowdown stops in every Friday right around this time, 2 o'clock. Donald and I coming back with more Coffee with the Coach, Chris Brown, and head coach Sean McDermott coming up, plus our NFL True and False coming up in the next segment as well. John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. Always good to have Lorenzo Alexander in studio with us. I learned from him, right? He talks about some of that special
team
stuff.
I think he learned from me with the Lowdown.
We're going to have to check. You didn't really, right? Look at his stuff and just.
Oh, no. No, we just came up with the same stuff.
Same stuff.
Yeah.
Pretty amazing. Lorenzo Alexander with the Lowdown. We do it Fridays at 2. We thank Lorenzo for joining us. The Bills injury report is out. The status for Sunday's game and out of the game. Ruled out linebacker Ramon Humber with his thumb. Looks like rookie Matt Milano will make his first NFL start Sunday in Cincinnati. Also ruled out, wide receiver Jordan Matthews with his thumb. And a couple of players questionable, three of them in the defensive backfield. Starting quarterback E.J. Gaines, questionable. And Gaines missed practice today, did not practice today with his groin. Starting safety Micah Hyde listed as questionable with really overall injuries, including a knee. Micah Hyde was able to practice on a limited basis today, and he told reporters the other day that he plans on playing. And backup cornerback, he actually would be E.J. Gaines' backup, Sharice Wright listed as questionable with a back injury. Sharice Wright got in limited work today. Also questionable offensive lineman Cordy Glenn. Deion Dawkins would be set to start there if Glenn can't go. We'll see how that shakes out on Sunday.
This is how it happens, man. You get to a certain point, week five we're in now. Mm-hmm. You get to this point in the season, every team has an injury list. And that list, you know, some teams' lists are longer than others. Some guys will end up on the list all year. You know, they deal with different injuries. Everybody is dealing with something. It's just, can you mask that pain enough to actually make it through a game? Can you play through the pain? That's always going to be the question, and we'll see how these guys end up playing.
And the Bengals have an injury list as well, and tight end Tyler Eifert is on it. He will not play. The Bengals injury list just came out a little bit ago. Tyler Eifert, the starting tight end, is out with the back. Looks like the other tight end, Tyler Kroft, will continue to fill in for him. Also ruled out, wide receiver John Ross with a knee, one of your favorites, the speed guy, right? What, yeah. Did you run a 4.2 something at the combine?
Yeah, 4.2 something. I don't even remember.
4.24? Was that crazy? Was
that
fast?
Yeah.
He's out. We don't have to worry about him. Right, he can run up and down the concourse 4.24. Backup safety, Darren Smith, out with an ankle injury. H-back, Ryan Hewitt. He is a starter, right? Is he number 89? I think he is. Ryan Hewitt is listed as out.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, with a knee injury. So that's interesting. So what's that, two starters out? And listed as questionable, linebacker Jordan Evans with a hamstring. So you're caught up on the injuries for the Bills and the Falcons coming up this Sunday. Now, head coach Sean McDermott has some thoughts on this matchup and some thoughts that he shared with our man Chris Brown. It is time this Friday for Coffee with a Coach, presented by Tim Hortons Cafe and Bake Shop.
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons. I'm Chris Brown, along with Bills head coach Sean McDermott, as the Bills go back out on the road again this week to face the Cincinnati Bengals at Paul Brown Stadium on Sunday. Coach, thanks for being with us. You guys are coming off a big win over Atlanta. The players in the locker room afterwards, though, seemed pretty grounded for the most part. What do you think it is that's keeping them from being satisfied with the results so far?
Well, Chris, I would start with the leadership in the locker room. The Kyle Williamses, the Lorenzo Alexanders, Eric Wood, Richie Incognito, among other leaders that I'm fortunate to have, to help spread my message. And those guys do a great job and keep our team grounded and focused where we need to be focused.
Charles Clay, one of the few players that had big performances for you in the victory. Going forward, it looks like he's going to probably be a focal point for future opposing defenses. As a coaching staff, does that mean you've got to work harder to keep getting him the ball, or do you turn to other options in your offense?
Well, it's important that we do what we do. And if Charles is open, then we get the ball to Charles. If someone else is open, then we get the ball to whoever else it is that's open. We spread the ball around. That's what an effective offense does. We take what the defense gives us. We're able to run the football this past week, and we need to do that and be able to do that moving forward.
Turning to the Bengals, their offense underwent a change early in the season at offensive coordinator Bill Lazor, now in place for the past couple of games, and looked like they found some rhythm against the Browns last week. They went to a quick game primarily, and Andy Dalton had 16 completions in a row at one point. How dangerous are they as an offense when Dalton's in a rhythm like that?
Well, they're extremely dangerous. Bill Lazor, the new offensive coordinator, does a great job. Was the coordinator a few years ago in Miami. I know Bill well. He does a great job, and he's using his weapons and putting the quarterback in positions to be successful. We'll have our hands full come Sunday afternoon.
All right, Coach, now it's time for our fan question of the week, where you, the fan, get to ask Coach a question. We go out to our own Lauren Hall at a local Tim Hortons for this week's fan question.
Hey, Chris, we are hanging out at Tim Hortons on Southwestern Boulevard right across from New Airfield, and we're with Neil. Neil, what's your question for Coach?
Hi, Coach. I've been a Bills fan since the old rack pile. Coach, this year, who do you think on defense has been your player that's had the most impact on the team?
All right, Coach, your defense has gotten off to a good start this year. Who's your pick?
Well, there's a whole host of choices, Neil, and you would start with Kyle Williams. There's a lot of other guys I could mention, Lorenzo Alexander, Eric Wood, Richie Incognito, and many others. Kyle would be my choice in this case, just due to the fact he's been a Buffalo Bill for his entire career. And he does a great job of leading in our locker room, taking my message to the locker room, give me a good feel for the pulse of this football team, and the hard work he puts in every season, and the way he packs his lunch every day, comes to work, really personifies who we are.
All right, Coach, as always, thanks for the time. Good luck keeping this winning streak rolling on Sunday in Cincinnati.
Thanks, Chris.
All right, that's Bills head coach Sean McDermott. This has been Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next week.
That is Coffee with the Coach, presented by Tim Hortons Cafe and Bake Shop. Now offering handcrafted lattes featuring three different flavors, starting at $2.29 for a limited time only here in Buffalo and in Staten Island, New York.
I want to see. Haven't tasted one.
I haven't either. I want to see Coach McDermott take a big slug of that coffee. Some
you
point
want to
your
see,
coffee
you want to see him just drink, though. Chug a whole cup of coffee.
Yeah, let's try it.
He might run and start bouncing off the walls behind Chris.
Hey, our Twitter poll, we want to re-engage with you in the remaining moments here of the show, a couple of minutes left. Bills, Bengals, 1 o'clock Sunday, you know the drill. What's the key, the number one key for a Buffalo victory over the Cincinnati Bengals? What is the most important thing they have to do? On Twitter, 38% of you say limiting the passing combination Andy Dalton to A.J. Green. You say that's number one. 31% of you say the receivers. Bills receivers have to step up. Zay Jones and the rest of them, Andre Holmes. 24% of you say winning the turnover battle is key. 8% of you have something else. Give us a call. We've got some phone lines open and some time to do it. 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-552-550 or on Twitter. Daniel calling from Buffalo. Hello, Daniel. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm listening pretty much every day to your show.
Oh, Daniel, that's great. Thank you.
No problem. What I have to say is kind of in between other and wide receiver. Wide receiver stepping up. I feel like they have to do it, but I also have another thing that I really believe strongly is I believe that they'll bring in they brought in this new guy Brown, and I think he's going to have a big game, him and probably Jones, but especially Brown, because the coaching staff has had a knack of being able to pull these diamonds out of the rough.
Yeah, in terms of Philly Brown, I'm not really sure what to expect of him in terms of offense. I think we'd expect to see him on special teams. If he's up, he's going to be on special teams a lot more. I think history, when you look back throughout the history, recent history when Tyrod Taylor has been here, he throws it to the guys that he's comfortable with, and guys that he is used to, that he knows will make plays for him. Philly Brown has not been here, so I wouldn't really expect him to come in and just make a huge impact and have a great game. You might see him out there and make one big catch or something like that, but you won't see him get that many targets in this game because he hasn't been here enough.
Well, let's talk about what the receiving picture is going to look like on Sunday, Donald, and this is all speculative. We know that, but with Jordan Matthews officially out now, what have they got? They've got on the one side Zay Jones, obviously the rookie, going to start this game. And on the other side, you would think Andre Holmes would be the starter, right?
Yep.
They typically, I don't think, if they use four wideout formations at all in the first four games, I don't think I've seen it. So now you're looking at who? Brandon Tate, perhaps? Kalen Clay, perhaps? Mm-hmm. Or Philly Brown? I think Brandon Tate might be the guy who would be the third, right?
I would think so.
And hopefully maintain some of his – well, actually, Kalen Clay gets a lot of reps too.
But Kalen Clay does get a lot of reps. Brandon Tate was here in the summer, and he was – I mean, not here in the summer, but obviously he was here in the summer, but he played in the slot a lot in the summer, And so I think – I wouldn't be shocked if you saw him in there a lot more playing in the slot.
So does Philly Brown fit in? Is Philly Brown even on the game day, active roster?
It's a big question.
Yeah.
Which one of those guys is up and which one is down?
Especially with the, the problem in the secondary with the maybe some thin situation in the Buffalo secondary.
Yeah. You might have both up. You might have one up, one down. I think Kalen Clay could really be the deep threat on this team. He has that speed. So it's going to be interesting to see if Brandon Tate is up or down. Brandon Tate is a solid – now, first of all, he's going back to the team where he came from, Cincinnati.
Right.
Solid returner. He is very consistent. He catches the ball, makes good decisions back there. Every time he is down, I'm kind of shocked by it. Like, man, Brandon Tate is down again? Wow,
yeah.
That's interesting.
He was
This past week.
Last week, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right. All right, time now for NFL, true or false. We do this every day. Look at some of the stories around the National Football League and try to figure out if it's for real or if it's baloney. NFL, true or false, Cowboys are in must-win mode this week. The Cowboys are going to play the Green Bay Packers, I should say. The Cowboys 2-2 coming off that loss at home to Los Angeles. They absolutely have to win, one might say. They need a signature win. They need the opportunity to, you know, go up against a Green Bay team that has had some issues of its own. And Green Bay giving up some yardage on the ground, which may open up some opportunities for Ezekiel Elliott. The Cowboys in must-win mode in Week 5. Well, I think it depends on what your expectations were for Dallas coming in. I guess I thought they might be the team to beat in the NFC East, but must-win mode, Week 5, nah, I don't think so, Donald. I'm going to say this is false.
Yeah, I'm going to say –
you're thinking about it. I like this.
Yeah, I'm thinking about it because I don't think that they are the same team from last year. I think their defense is not the same. Obviously, they're not the same team. I think this is must-win mode for the Dallas Cowboys. The only issue is – I don't know. That division, I think a team is going to make it into the playoffs with, like, 9 wins in that division, you know, 8 or 9 wins in that division. So it probably is not, but I'm going to go true on this one.
You think it's true, Cowboys in must-win mode. All right, that's one of the games to talk about this week. The Cowboys home at 4:25 on Sunday against the Green Bay Packers. Here's another one, Marshawn Lynch in Seattle. Marshawn Lynch will have a breakout game against the Baltimore Ravens this week. The Seahawks going to play at 4:05 p.m., Marshawn Lynch will have a breakout game. What do you think, Donald?
I think Marshawn will. I think when you listen to Greg Cosell, he talked about giving him the ball.
Against the Rams.
Marshawn.
Not the Ravens, the Rams.
Baltimore, Oakland.
Okay.
Yeah, Baltimore's playing Oakland this
week.
So, yeah, he's going to be up against the Ravens.
You're right.
And I think he's going to get the ball a lot more because Marshawn Lynch is that type of guy that can truly, like, you talk about an identity of a team, an identity of an offense. You give it to Marshawn Lynch, and he will create that identity, you know. And they need that identity, especially if Derek Carr is not going to play. You have to rely on E.J. Manuel. I don't think they want to put the game on his shoulders. The issue is, does Baltimore now stack the box and say, you know what, E.J. Manuel, you have to beat us through the air.
All right, so you say
so that's – I'm going to say true that he will have a breakout game. I think they're going to give him the ball, and he's going to be beast mode again.
I'm going to say false. I still think Baltimore's defense is pretty capable. Finally, on the schedule this week, the Jets will hand the Cleveland Browns their first win. The Browns, who are going to the game 0-4, the Jets surprisingly 2-2. They're going to play at 1 o'clock this afternoon – or Sunday afternoon in Cleveland. The Browns get their first win against the Jets. I'm going to say false, Donald. I watched the Browns this week. Watched them lose to Cincinnati and they're like a Triple-A team.
Yeah,
they really are.
Yeah. I'm going to go false on this one as well. You know, they are like a Triple-A team. They are not playing well at all. And I think the Jets, you know, coming off of – are they 2 straight wins, the Jets?
Yeah. Yep.
I think those guys down in New York feel good about what they've done.
Yeah, and Miami and last week.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that they're going to go in – or they're going to play the Browns and feel like – hopefully they just don't sleep on their Browns, but – I think the Jets will handle the Browns and win this game.
NFL True or False, presented by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Donald and I back in a moment to talk some more. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts, from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
The John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What Have We Learned is presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Mark Kelso, former Bills safety, color analyst on the Bills Radio Network. He was in studio with us in the first hour of the show. We talked to them about this 3-1 start for the Bills, everything that's gone well, including the culture that Sean McDermott has tried to instill and his routine and process and what it means to this team.
I think he feels like there's some steps to putting together a winning attitude, and he wants to execute those steps. And then if you don't win, well, then you say, well, we may need to modify a few things. But if you start to win, like what has been happening here, then you say, well, we're certainly not going to relax them now because it seems like this protocol is putting the players in the right frame of mind.
Mark Kelso. You'll hear a lot of him on Sunday. He'll be joining us on the broadcast starting at 11 o'clock on the pregame and 1 o'clock kickoff from Paul Brown Stadium. Also on the show today, Greg Cosell. He is executive producer of ESPN's NFL Matchup, joins us every Friday. And he told us that he believes that there's a formula for teams as they prepare to play the Buffalo Bills, and we'll see if the teams are able to stop them. Here's what Greg Cosell had to say.
This is a team that's built personnel-wise, formationally, on running the ball. So every team that game plans to play the Buffalo Bills is going to game plan to stop the run first. Defensive players in the middle of the second quarter don't say, you know what? LeSean McCoy only has 31 yards on 9 carries. We don't have to worry about the run anymore. That's not the way this works.
Greg Cosell on how teams get ready for the Bills. I think he's spot on there. I expect to see more of that from the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday.
I think he is spot on there. I think, you know, as a player, you don't know what – first of all, you definitely don't know what the stats are, you know, mid-game. You might be able to say, hey, man, we're shutting him down, you know, but you never truly know. And all you know is that is LeSean McCoy back there. And he can break one at any time. Yeah. So we have to stay on our P's and Q's, or he is going to break one and break this game wide open.
Yep. The keys for a Buffalo victory. That was our Twitter poll today. We discussed a lot of it with you on the telephone today. What is the key to a Buffalo victory, the number one key? And on Twitter, most of you said it was pretty evenly split, but many of you said limiting the connection, Andy Dalton to A.J. Green, is the number one key. 37% said that. 31% say Buffalo's receivers stepping up without Jordan Matthews. That would be the number one key. 24% of you say winning the turnover battle would be the best key for the Bills on Sunday. 8% had something else. I'm going to line up in the turnover column there, Donald. I know it's kind of trite to say win the turnover battle, but I really think it's critical with the way the Bills are playing right now, kind of limited production offensively. If they can get some short fields and end some drives with takeaways, I think they're going to be in real good shape. Maybe even a double-digit win if they can do that a little bit this week.
For me, as we were just talking about how a defense knows LeSean McCoy, this Buffalo Bills defense knows A.J. Green is on the other side of that ball. And that A.J. Green can make plays at any given time and any point in the game. And so I think it's limiting the A.J. Green to Andy Dalton connection.
Bills have ruled a couple of players.
To A.J. Green connection.
The Bills have ruled a couple of players out, including wide receiver Jordan Matthews. He is out with his thumb. Ramon Humber is out with his thumb. Questionable, E.J. Gaines, interesting, the Bills starting corner, and his backup, Cerise Wright, both of them questionable, and Micah Hyde is questionable with his knee. That's going to do it for us. I hope you get to tune into the game on Sunday at 1 o'clock. We are back here at 12 noon on Monday with another edition of the show, and we, of course, will talk at length about the Bills and the Bengals. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Our intercom board op today, Ryan Gates, production assistance from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, our producer, Jay Harris. And we're back on Monday at noon with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.